Thanks, Steve. Hi, it's us. It's Bill and Wendy. Hello.
Hi.
Welcome aboard.
I am aboard.
To some extent.
All aboard.
It's the Thursday presentation of our show. You can listen in. You can call in. 312-981-7200 would get that done. We would love to hear from you.
You know where that all aboard is from, and Kevin, you may remember this, when you change levels in Candy Crush. All aboard, and you get on the little train.
From train stations. Maybe
well, I know. Duh, that's where it originated.
They do say it at train stations.
But you just gave me a little Candy Crush
That was
feeling.
My goal.
This history of train stations brought to you by Metro.
Right.
I worked on the authentic steam engine at Brookfield Zoo, so don't talk to me about trains.
What's the training like that like? What do they? How do they train you to do that, to be on that train? What is the exact process behind that?
Well, I never got to work on the engine because I did the tours on it at Brookfield Zoo.
Yeah.
And they claimed that they didn't want to take me off the talking end of it.
You were too good to be taken off the talking end of it.
That's what they said, but I'm like, but I want to be the fireman on there. I want to shovel coal.
Right.
And now I shovel coal on the radio.
Yes, you could
say
that.
Not really coal.
Is there a glass ceiling in the train business, the zoo train business, when it comes to women achieving that goal?
I wanted to be the first woman, but Char Busher got to do it.
Char Busher was the first woman.
And she looked better in the overalls?
She was stronger than I was. And she looked fine in the overalls.
Yeah.
But her mom was my boss.
Char Busher's mom was your boss? Yeah.
Whom I loved, Maggie Busher. But yes, Char got to do the fireman's job. It was more money. I wanted more money.
She is, when you go to, and Steve will attest to this because we went together, we go to the Train Hall of Fame in Cooperstown, New York, and you see the Char Busher display and you say to yourself, could she be as amazing as they paint her? But
She was great. Right.
Oh,
she was really great.
Actually, the Hall of Fame starts in Cooperstown. It's a single gauge track in Albany, right?
Right.
It's a moving exhibit.
Guys, you laugh, but there's the Illinois Railway Museum in Union, Illinois.
I'm not laughing.
And it's pretty fantastic.
No one's
laughing. We're not laughing.
No.
I went there to take Michael, who is now 16. He was 2 at the time, to ride on Thomas the Tank Engine.
Oh, really?
Mm. And that was a waste of my time. They scared you that you had to get tickets right when they went on sale.
Mm-hmm.
So we did it online, and I couldn't sleep. I had to make sure there was confirmation that we got tickets in August to go. And then we went there, and despite the tickets, there were like several trips, and we got the 10 a.m. one. In case there was a problem, there were other ones to go on. And all you did is you got on Thomas the Tank Engine, and you drove, Thomas drove, and took you for maybe a mile or maybe two, and then they put the brakes on, and then Thomas backed up the whole route. And I'm like, that's not what I paid $50 for.
You can ride a train like that inside the Hawthorne Mall in Vernon Hills.
But it's not Thomas.
No, I guess that's the difference.
And then Sir Topham Hatt was there, and there was a meet and greet. And God love my dishonest husband. We were waiting in line for Michael to meet Sir Topham Hatt to get a picture taken with him. And right as the line, there was this huge line, and all of a sudden, Sir Topham Hatt's little handler said, "Sir Topham Hatt must take a break for lunch. He gets hungry too." So everybody like who was in line, everybody just kind of dispersed. Like, why wouldn't you just stay there and wait?
Yeah, right.
So Jim ran right up to the guy and said, "Listen, we have been waiting in line. He is not going to lunch until I get a picture taken with my son." And Sir Topham Hatt looked frightened and took a picture with Michael, and then we went about our business.
You got it done.
Sir Topham Hatt was taking a lunch break during
I know. Isn't that terrible?
He gets hungry.
That his felt was starting to stick to him or something?
I don't know.
Wendy, I'm now seeing online, this is a coincidence, that they are making a movie about Char Busher's life, and Char Busher will be portrayed by Joseph Fiennes in that movie. That's interesting casting, wouldn't you say?
Better casting, you know, than the Michael Jackson. And now I got to tell you, I know it's horrific, this Joseph Fiennes playing the part of
Michael Jackson.
Yes, in this movie, but I hadn't heard of the movie before the controversy, and now I can't wait
to see the movie.
Now?
I do too.
The premise being?
Apparently, after 9/11, he takes a road trip with Elizabeth Taylor.
Michael Jackson.
Michael Jackson. Elizabeth Taylor and Marlon Brando. It's one of those road pictures that they used to do with Crosby and Hope. So they get in the car, the three of them, because
9/11 happened.
9/11 happened. Well, I know you know that part, but there actually was a bond between those three.
I knew obviously Elizabeth Taylor and Michael Jackson, yeah. But where does Brando fit in?
It's really weird, but I've read stories about his friendship. Michael Jackson had a strange friendship with
a lot
with
of
everybody.
People.
With everybody he had a friendship with, he had a strange friendship. And you could put strange in italics, the likes of which have never been seen before. That would be accurate.
But now, I don't know if it was a joke when Dean was on with Steve Cochran earlier this morning, but I believe Dean. See, I am so gullible, I swear to God. I believe Dean and I believe you.
What do
and
you
I
believe?
Shouldn't. But I think Dean said something like on their road trip, which of course, you know, since 9/11 happened, they wanted to get out of the city and
right.
stay safe. So they drove. But with Marlon Brando being in your car, I would bet the back seat. Maybe. No, I bet Elizabeth goes in the back seat. But Marlon kept pointing to different fast food places to want to stop and eat. Is that real?
There's a Hardee's over there. I wouldn't mind stopping at Hardee's for a couple of things. Oh, that'd be good. A Hardee's right about
but
now.
But he would be the guy to prove it. You know, he enjoyed fast food, it looked.
It seemed that he had a penchant for
Although
the fast
Although so did
food.
Elizabeth Taylor,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, I could see her stopping somewhere.
Did they take a wheelchair in there? Help me in, honey. Is my lipstick on my lips?
Oh, no. What, Steve?
If they were on the Dan Ryan today, they might have some trouble. I just want to give you a quick note. There's
sure.
some protests involving, it looks like Chicago State on the south side, and some protesters have made their way onto the Ryan, maybe around 87th Street or in that area. So we've got some blockage there. We'll have more coming
All
up
right.
in traffic.
And
All
do
right.
we know, I'm sorry, do we know what the protest is about?
Well, there have been a lot of cuts there. There have been some problems. There just was an audit report about the president and some spending. And they've said they can't make payroll maybe next month or March. So,
but I didn't hear the group. I'm sorry.
I don't have the specific group,
okay.
but just I think it's involving Chicago State in one way or another.
Okay.
But it is creating a traffic jam a little bit in the area, right? Is that what we're learning? All right.
wait, this just did really quick.
Sure.
Sir Topham Hatt still goes out to Union, Illinois, Melissa?
Yes, and he still takes a lunch break when you've been waiting in line and it's 100 degrees and your three-year-old just wants a picture, and he goes to lunch.
Oh, see, that is so wrong.
He's a, for people who don't know, because I'm not sure myself, he's a character on Thomas the Tank Engine. Is that what he is?
Yeah, he's the main dude.
Oh, he is?
He's Sir Topham Hatt. He's the main guy.
Wait, Melissa, it's so funny. Melissa just goes, he's Sir Topham Hatt.
You don't need to explain who he is. He's Sir Topham Hatt. So I'm just guessing here, he wears a top hat,
yes,
doesn't he?
And he's in charge of all the trains and the station and all that. He's like the mayor of Train Town.
And he gets like, he disciplines the trains when they don't listen.
George Carlin played the voice of him, and so did Ringo Starr.
Oh, right.
He's the plantation owner in many ways, right?
Yeah.
Wait,
not
wasn't
really.
That Shining Time Station, though?
Shiny Time Station is the name of the station that Thomas is based out of.
Right.
But no, it was Thomas the Tank Engine was the gist,
okay.
of it. And yes, George Carlin provided the voice. And Alec Baldwin did it in the movie
right.
of Thomas the Tank Engine. So a lot of celebrities played Sir Topham Hatt, and they don't take lunch breaks,
no.
but this guy does.
Well, that's crazy.
I forgot. It's like 100 degrees.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
Well, thanks, Melissa. That's startling news.
I just had to share.
All right. Well, we appreciate that. Have a great day.
Thank you so much for sharing. I love when people share.
Can I tell you, strange casting, but I was thinking about this because everyone's in an uproar that if Michael Jackson's going to be portrayed in a film, you don't get a British white guy to play Michael Jackson. But do you remember the movie about Bob Dylan a couple of years ago where Cate Blanchett played
yes.
Bob Dylan?
There was,
Great
there
point.
Were a series of actors who did it, right?
Five different actors played Bob Dylan, but the strangest one would have been Cate Blanchett, who's always good in everything.
Still a white woman, though.
You don't think, when you're thinking of Bob Dylan, that wouldn't be your first choice,
no.
probably.
Let's
Peter
just
Pan.
Hope that Joseph Fiennes doesn't get an Oscar nomination on this, because
right.
that would be trouble.
That would be the worst thing in the world.
Peter Pan's pretty much always been played by a
Kathy
woman.
Kathy Rigby, Mary Martin.
Who's the daughter of the news person, Davis?
Oh,
you know who I'm talking about? They did the live Peter Pan.
Oh, right.
Yes, she's on Girls.
You have a crush on her.
Yeah.
Oh, that was not for air.
that part's quiet. Allison Williams. Right. That's not for air,
Sorry.
Though.
All right.
All right. We'll take a quick break.
You're
I'll
so
explain
cute when
some
you're
things.
Blushing.
We'll do more show. It's Bill and Wendy WGN.
I figured we'd go to Hardee's, maybe stop by Wendy's. If there's a Culver's, we could go there.
I've never been to a Hardee's.
Oh, you're going to like Hardee's, Elizabeth.
Does my hair look okay?
Yes.
Does this moo-moo make me look big?
Moo-moo. Moo-moo.
Is Moo and Oink still open?
No. There's a couple things we need to tell you that are coming up on today's show. Rich King, longtime Chicago sportscaster, has announced that he is retiring. A month ago, we tried this with Jay Levine. We bring them in and we say, please don't retire. Please rethink this. We were not successful when we tried that with Jay Levine. We will try it with Rich King and see if we can make him change his mind and not retire.
Don't you think they're pretty sure when they make the announcement?
They're positive. Yep. They're positive. Except the guys who play sports, like Michael Jordan's a good example. He'll retire, but then he'll go, wait a minute, I'm not going to retire. What was I thinking?
So are you saying Rich King is going to come back and play with the White Sox for a season?
Play with the White Sox for a year. See what he can do. Also, Barry Gordon is a name you may not know. We're having Barry on because the other day we lost one of our favorite character actors, Abe Vigoda, and Barry Gordon was one of the kids. There were five kids on Fish. Barry Gordon was one of those kids, so we said, let's talk to him.
Wait, he went on to do quite a bit of stuff, right?
Oh, a bunch of stuff.
Okay, I know Barry Gordon.
He was the head of the Screen Actors Guild for a little while.
Hmm.
But yeah, he was in all kinds of episodic television and did a bunch of movies.
And the gist of the Fish show was pretty much taking in these troubled kids.
Five kids of different ethnicities. One of them, by the way, Loomis Fish, was played by... Todd Bridges. That's right.
I totally remember that show. And it was very short-lived, but I remember, yeah. I felt like it was on forever.
Unlike Fish himself.
Sadly true.
Although, you know what is bothersome to me? And people posted this on my Facebook page, and I saw it all around. The headline was, the sunken-eyed actor who played Fish. Mm-hmm. That is not what you want as a headline when you've died.
Well, it's the dyed part that you don't want in the head.
I know, but the hardest sunken-eyed actor is...
It sounds cruel, but
it's
accurate.
Cruel.
But it is accurate. So
well,
when you...
Yours would say the goofy guy who always wore a baseball cap. You don't want that on your obit.
What do you think, when you die, 1,000 years from now, when you finally succumb, what do you want that brief description to read?
Brash and bawdy.
Brash and bawdy. Lottie. She's gone to the grave.
Lottie naughty.
Will you please, the two of you, will you please do my eulogy?
Brash
please?
And bawdy and a little naughty.
Oh, Steve and I already wrote your eulogy. We wrote it long ago.
All right.
It's
I trust,
ready to roll.
It's weird that
I
Bill dated it.
What's wrong?
I put a date on it. Well, just to be safe, I put a date on it just in case. You know, just
it
to
was
keep
the
it fresh.
Best if used by.
Yes. Yes.
I do have an expiration date. But
we all
I,
do.
I do feel that sunken-eyed actor is wrong. How about long time?
Look, Fish looked like he was 70, or Fish, right?
Vigoda.
He looked like a fish.
He was our age when he was on Barney Miller.
Think about that. When he was Sal Tessio in The Godfather, when he was in the early days of Barney Miller, he was younger than we are now, but he looked way, way, way older.
Way older, because his eyes were sunken.
I know, hence the headline. But I just think that's mean.
But, you know, I've told you this before. I love All in the Family. That's one of my all-time favorite shows. And when I watch it now, Carol O'Connor is younger playing Archie Bunker than I am right now. And that...
He looks it.
My brain doesn't accept that. Like, I go, how can Archie Bunker be younger than I am?
It's called makeup.
I guess.
Abe Vigoda, sunken-eyed character actor, dead at 94. That is wrong, you guys.
He put a little sunken eye makeup on this one.
Get him some Genucel.
They didn't have Genucel back then. It didn't exist back then. But when you hear that, as cruel as it sounds, it kind of, like right. For anyone who's, well, I don't know who would go. I don't know who Abe Vigoda is. Everybody would know him, I would think.
He's not that sunken-eyed, in fact, you know. He looks a little bit like a chimpanzee.
Well, they should have put that. Chimp look-alike Abe Vigoda passes away at 94. That
better than sunken eye.
No, it's worse.
Really?
It's way worse. It's terrible.
That's just mean.
It is mean, but you got to admit, it fairly encapsulates
What's
Abe
your
Vigoda.
Adjective? You have to have something there.
A long-time actor.
It says character actor, so what's the head of character actor?
You have to, yeah.
Long time.
But you could say
how about
that
Abe Vigoda finally dead? There's your headline because everybody thought
worse.
He was dead.
That's way worse.
Sunken-eyed?
It's like a buried treasure. That's what it conjures up. It conjures up the image of a buried treasure, and that's what he was.
Barry dies.
He is now. He is now. Yeah.
All right, that's not nice.
We should get his daughter on. You guys are gonna go to hell.
I wonder if Abe will be there.
No.
That wouldn't that be the nicest surprise?
Right.
They're hey. Giving the funeral for him, and he just pops up in the back. Bernice. I have when we have Barry Gordon on, by the way, Steve. He and I don't want to. I don't think I should reveal this yet, but there's a personal connection between myself and Barry Gordon. A very, very important milestone in my life has to do with Barry Gordon, and I'll explain that to him.
Yeah,
and then you'll hear him go, "What do I care?
No,
that'll happen on the air."
He will not do
it's
that.
It's an important thing to me, and Barry Gordon plays a large part in it.
Even if he doesn't feel it's important, he will make
like
it,
it
is. Unlike Steve Bertrand's ability to do.
Steve has the ability.
What do you mean? My mom's maiden name was Gordon. We might be related.
Oh, all right. We all have something to share with Barry Gordon later on.
Sunken-eyed, that's just mean.
It is, you know, when you say it, it is kind of disturbing. But by the same token, if they say to you quickly, hey, you got to write these things quick, describe Abe Vigoda in the headline.
Well, first of all, Bill, they didn't have to write this one quick.
No, they had some time, I guess, on this one. All right. That's
you
true.
Are so right, Bertrand. Steve Bertrand for the win.
It just revised the 1990s version.
Well, I guess this is common knowledge. All the news agencies, all your news networks and news bureaus have these things ready. They have kind of bios ready for your bigger stars because they know that the older people are going to, at some point, they're going to die. So they don't want to be left at the last second to have to write these things. So they've got them on a file somewhere.
And as Steve points out, especially Abe Vigoda's.
Yeah.
But whose was released wrongly? Remember they had somebody's bio? And it was, I thought, fairly recently that they...
Who would it have been?
You mean that they killed?
Yeah, but he wasn't dead.
Because it did happen to Abe Vigoda.
It
happened to Vito Marzullo here in Chicago.
It did happen
times.
To Vito Marzullo.
Former alderman, late alderman.
Was it Ted Williams? Is that who it was? It was some baseball player, I think, who they announced.
I don't
announced.
Know. It was some celebrity, I thought, because it had hit the news that he had passed away, and it's like, whoops, no, we hit send accidentally.
I know.
I don't remember who it was. I'll look into that.
But how nice to be the person who you're told that, you know, you're watching TV and they announce your death and you go, wait a minute, I'm not quite there yet. So it's like having bonus time. You get bonus time.
And Abe was pretty cool about it.
He joked about
it.
He'd show up on Conan O'Brien's show
joking about it.
Not anymore. All right, we'll take a quick break. We've got news. Steve has the news. We'll talk to Rich King. And that's all coming up next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. It's good to be king, just for a while. Well, here's one of those things. I've always wanted to talk to Rich King. Enjoy his work immensely. He's been reporting on sports here in this town for nearly 50 years, just shy of 50 years. And he says he doesn't want to do it anymore, and we won't stand for it. Rich, please, change your mind.
Well, I change my mind so often that I can't do it this time, or else I really need to catch the heat from some of my friends in the business. I've been doing this for the last 8 to 10 years, and now I'm finally doing it.
Well, see, you've saved your money. You can do it, because I feel you're too young to do it.
Well, you know, I tell you, I was blessed with very good genes. My mother died last October at the age of 97.
Oh, God love
her. She looked like she was 77. I'm 68, and I feel like 48, and I could probably go on for 5 more years if I wanted to. But a lot of things went into my mind about this. This is not a rash decision at this point. So I decided to do it and really have a chance to expand my life. Retirement is a funny thing. You think it's an end, but it also can be a beginning. And that's, I think you have to treat it, or else you wind up really depressed about it.
Rich, we've asked Dave Ennett to join us. You were the person who unleashed Dave Ennett on an unsuspecting public many years ago.
I know. He was one of the best hires I ever made. Look at his career. My God. Press box named after him. And I'm so proud of him. He's done such a great job over the years and makes a great call. You know, I was just listening to him this past week. And sounds a little bit like Vin Scully, the older he gets.
Yep.
You know?
Absolutely.
He's been compared to Vin a lot.
Well.
Yeah,
very, very nice guy.
I need to say a good friend. His daughter, Lindsay, is a great writer. She helped me in my second book, Back in the Game, and did a great job in finishing up that book for me.
Well, we just found that out off the air. Dave, Bill asked me, who do you think helped Rich King? Who co-authored? I'm like, I don't know, Dave Ennett? And Bill goes, not even close. I was pretty close,
fairly
wasn't
close.
I,
fairly
Dave?
Close. Yeah. Yeah, same DNA, I think.
Rich, what did you see in Dave, a very young Dave Ennett, that made you say, I got to hire this guy. He's got a very bright future ahead of him.
Well, he had a great, first thing, he has a great work ethic. I don't know how he's doing it at so many shows and so many different outlets at this point in his career, but he's doing it. I did it years ago, and I was very tired doing it. And he's a great talent. He's a great writer. He's obviously a great communicator. The games speak for themselves when he does them on the radio. He's a professional broadcaster, and that's I knew that. I could see that in him early in the game. He's and plus, that he never gets tired of working, which is, you know, all of us in this business work hard. He's one of them.
I'm tired this morning. I worked for you last night. It was a short night. But you know, everything, and I mentioned this the other day, the guys on the beat asked me, and I probably learned more from Rich than anybody I've worked
that
with
says a lot.
In my career. From the days where he ran the newsroom mm-hmm. over at CBS, and I was a gopher, basically. I've answered the phones, and then I became a writer, and I would do anything I could to try to ingratiate myself with the sports guys, you
sure.
know, so I could kind of weasel my way into sports. Rich had sort of done the same thing, right? I mean, that was sort of your path.
Yeah. Oh, no question. I was a newsman for 7 years. I was assistant news director. In fact, you're right, I ran the station with John Altman for 4 years. And in 1977, we got the Bears rights, and I weasel my way is a good word. I talked my way into doing the production for the Bears broadcast and also doing some on-air work, and that's how my career began. I didn't get on the air until 1977, and Dave and I did the first ever Bears broadcast in 1977 from Canton for the Bears, and on BBM, that is. And it was a great time. We had a great run, and as you go out in life, it's still a great run. I still enjoy a lot of what I do. And the reason I retired is basically, it's very simple. I at my age and what happened to me in my life, I decided I needed more time with my wife, because I remarried 6 years ago, a lovely woman. And grateful to have her. And I wake up every weekend, and, you know, Dave, you know what this business is like. It's long hours. And what happens is you wind up, wait a minute, I'm 68 years old all of a sudden. I've seen a lot of people die in my life. And I don't mean just, I mean seeing them in person. And that's the hardest thing in
sure.
the world. My first wife, Maggie, died, and I'll take that to my grave. And my mother died this past October, and April's sister died a month later, Noelle. So we had a lot of death in our family, and I was taking care of my mother for 21 years since my brother died. And when she died, it kind of changed things a little bit, because now we have some freedom, and we're going to go from here. But life is, you got to see that when it happens, you know, and I think there's a time I can go on and do something else and maybe work some part-time deals and enjoy the life a little bit more.
Rich, you wrote a beautiful, essentially a love letter to your first wife, Maggie, in your book, My Maggie, and then a fantastic follow-up that you already mentioned, Back in the Game. When you're writing something like that that's so personal and so poignant, what is that like? That's got to be a just a bundle of mixed emotions, huh?
Well, My Maggie was a great book for three-quarters of it, and then at the end, I got really depressed because I wrote about her death. The second book, Back in the Game, about me and April, that was a happy book all the way, because we're still living it. And that's the thing about my career that I'm most proud of. You know, people ask me what sports was great. I accomplished a lot of avenues in sports, but it gave me the platform to write two books about life. Maggie enjoyed every day of her 53 years. She taught me that. It was hard for me to learn, obviously, but she tried to teach me that every day is important to her. A glass of soda or a cappuccino or a veggie pizza was a big event. She liked the small things in life, because she was going blind and going deaf, and she could have them. And that taught me a lot. In the second book, when I was depressed after Maggie died, I met April, and everything turned around. She's, you know, I keep telling people she's the exact opposite in every way, body-wise, face-wise. But the one thing they do have together, and that's a zest for life. And April has that. And she brought me back from really a depression. And so, you know, I want to spend some time with her. You know, it's our time now to get together and go and do things. Years ago, I wrote a book by Ernest Becker called The Nile of Death. And you have to use that, I think, use death as a reason to enhance your life. And I did that. I tried to do that. Maggie did that. We tried to enjoy the life, because, you know, you only have so many years. Later on, that book the idea of that book, the thrust of that book, was done in a movie called Hannah and Her Sisters by Woody Allen, in which at the end of the movie, she says, you know what, if this is all we got, let's just enjoy it. Enjoy the day, enjoy the movies, enjoy the shows, enjoy being with your wife, enjoy everything. And that's what you have to do. And it's a hard thing to do because you wind up with all these complications in your life, you know, the work, and then maybe you're doing something else, and you wind up getting aggravated and looking ahead to the future. Well, the future all of a sudden, you know, it's not so long. And when the future is not so long, you begin to think, whatever I've got, how about 20 years left? But well, I'm going to enjoy those 20 years.
That is spoken wonderfully. Rich King on the line with us, retiring after 48 years in the business from WGN Sports at this point. I was just telling Bill off the air before we spoke to you, Rich. It's like, you know, Bill and I haven't saved our money. We're not going to retire. But our job is much easier. You know, radio's different than TV. And we brought up you and Dave Ennett. You guys are doing so many projects and you have so many hours that you do deserve some time off to enjoy your life.
Well, that's exactly right. You know, we broadcasting and people do not understand it. They think I think people think we go to games, have a hot dog, and go home. I'm serious. I mean, people tell me, "Oh, you had a great." It's no question. It's a great job. I loved every minute of it. But it is time consuming. You know, I had three jobs at one time. Dave's now doing. He's doing Northwestern. He's freelancing for GNTV. He's doing other projects. His life is wrapped up. My life every weekend. I'm gone Friday, Saturday, and Sunday nights. And people sitting at home. So that's an issue. It becomes an issue. Wait a minute. Well, how long can I do this? And if you have the opportunity, the financial willpower and the financial stability to not do it, and then you say, well, wait, I'm not going to do it because I want to enjoy my life. I want to enjoy the life of April, and that's something that's just top priority for me. And that's the only way I could do it. Unfortunately, I'd love to stay in the business and do it, but that's not possible in this business because it takes too much of your time. It's a great business, don't get me wrong. I'm grateful for what I had. But there comes a time when you say, look, your family, your wife, you know, that's more important right now.
You know, when he says he's been talking about this for years, he's not kidding.
Really?
I mean, I can't tell you how many conversations I've had with Rich over the years where he said, yeah, I think this is going to be it. I want to get to spring and I'll be whatever age it was going to be. And then I'll get to my next birthday. I think I'm going to hang it up. And that was like 10 years ago.
I owe more guys money in this town. I bet I might be retired, you know, and I'm not retired. And I owe guys $100 dinners. I mean, this is 5 years ago. I told somebody in Bourbon, I said, look, if I'm here next, I'll give you $20. Well, it's $100 now. I mean,
but that's a true testament as to how much you loved your job, Rich. I mean, you don't want to do it, but there comes a point. I love what I do too, but I realize all the, you're not going to have as much stress when you retire because part of that stress is getting to all your different places on time. And that's what's going to be awesome is to have no stress.
Well, it's a deadline business, no question about it. But Dave and I do. You're on there at 9 o'clock. You got to be ready, and there's no not being ready. But it also is true that you have to enjoy your life, and that's the main thing for me is just to enjoy the life. And I love working with Dan Rohn. I got great producers, Jackie Bang and Bob Jordan and Jim. I've been doing 24 years with those guys. There's gonna be some tears at the end of this thing, but you know. Time to pull the trigger, and I think the time is now. My mother's death was a huge factor in it, and also the other factor I mentioned was being with my wife on the weekends. You look back and you say, my first marriage, Maggie died at 53. You look back on that, we had a great marriage. It was wonderful, but there's so many things we could have done. We put off. We didn't go to Europe. We didn't do this. We didn't do that. And looking back on it, I don't want to make that same regret.
Absolutely.
I could have done something. April and I are going to travel. We're going to go to Europe. We're going to go to Australia. We're going to see all the things you want to see. We'll have time to do it. And in this business, I think this business demands your time. I don't think you can do it. Some guys do it part-time, but I don't think you can do it part-time because if you do it part-time, then you're going to lose your sharpness. You're going to lose your being in the moment, being in the game. You have to keep track of everything in this business, especially in sports. And that is gone when you retire. And if you're semi-retired, I think you wind up making mistakes, you know, if you don't follow the way you should.
Rich, are you okay on time? Because we still haven't talked about your first love, the Chicago White Sox. That hasn't even come up yet. We have other questions for you. Are you okay on time?
Yeah, I got an interview at 11 o'clock. See where I am right? I'm parked in front of U.S. Cellular Field waiting for an interview in about 10 minutes, so I can walk right in. So I got 10 minutes.
All right, stay where you are. Rich King says he wants to retire. We're doing our best to talk him out of it, but
no,
he makes a very good argument.
No, now I want him
argument.
To do it.
He's making a
I
good argument.
I want to retire with you, Rich. You have talked me into it, and I'm young.
All right, stick around. We've got a little bit more coming your way next. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
I'm not that young, by the way. Working much harder than we have, that's for sure. He's Rich King, and after 48 years in the business, he wants to take some time to enjoy life while he still has some life left in him. How does that sound, Rich?
Exactly right. That's exactly right. That's what you have to do. That's the reason for this whole thing. And again, it's just sad to leave the GM family because it really is a nice group over there. And I will miss those guys immensely. I miss all the people in the business, too. I hang around with them on the various shoots we do around town, all the camera guys and the reporters. I got a lot of friends in this business. I have to maintain contact, and after I retire, and we get together occasionally and keep that arm out there.
Rich, what's the difference in reporting sports in this city, in Chicago, do you think, as opposed to other cities around the country?
Well, I wish I could answer that question. I never worked anywhere else, but I'll tell you what Chicago is. And Chicago is a very provincial city. It's a city that, if you earn the trust of the audience, it's the ball game, you know. You have to be around. I'm a native Chicago, and I grew up in Pilsen, 17th and Racine. I went to De La Salle High School here on the south side, right down the road from where I am right now. And I went to UIC. I never left this town. I had a chance to go to Atlanta as a newsman and then New York as a newsman, and I didn't want to do it. And stayed in Chicago all my life. It's a very good sports town, obviously, and a very loyal town. If people like you, they'll stick by you. And I've had that very fortunate luck over the years that people have stuck by me.
Yeah, I was telling these guys earlier, Rich, about the days when you were on the White Sox radio crew. And I was the producer back in the studio. But Joe McConnell, who was the great play-by-play voice of the Bears for a long time and also did the White Sox, and then Harry Carey and Jimmy Pearsall and Rich. Mm-hmm. That was the radio team. And, I mean, Harry and Jimmy, to this day, the most entertaining duo.
Of all
certainly
time.
Certainly not politically correct.
Never.
But
never.
The most fun to listen to of anybody. And Rich was right in the middle of all that.
Yeah, you know, Dave, if I wrote a book about that 2 years, I'd be sued. that was the wildest 2 years of my life and then the most fun 2 years of my life. Jimmy Pearsall, a character up to the extreme, and Harry, of course, so many stories. And, in fact, I got to cover it when Harry died in 98. I happened to be out in Palm Springs covering it and told so many stories about his great life and what a character he was. And Joe McConnell, the consummate professional, I'm a Facebook friend with Joe now. You talk about a great 2 years. It was a lousy team. They didn't do much. The guys were great, though. The players were great. Once you're with a team, you're part of the team family. They trust you, and you trust them. So it was a great 2 years. And that was my dream as in college, to be a White Sox broadcaster. I realized that dream for 2 years, and, of course, the rights got shipped out to a different station, and I lost the games. But at least I had it. I had that dream of 2 years in the White Sox broadcast booth.
You saw some amazing things in your career here in town. You saw a White Sox World Series. You saw a Bears Super Bowl championship 30 years ago. You saw several Bulls championships, and now the streak that the Blackhawks have been on. Is there one in particular, Rich, that just means the most to you?
Oh, my, no question. I put it in my second book back in the game. The White Sox bus. I was on the White Sox bus in 05. Don't ask me how I got on it. I was surely lucky. I mean, maybe somebody likely in the organization put me on it. I don't know, but it was the number one bus. Jerry Reinsdorf was on it, Mayor Daley, Ozzy, Canerco. It was number uno bus. And back in 05, Mackey had been dead for 3 years. And it was just emotional. I mean, Mackey was a big White Sox fan. And the emotion of that moment, being with Reinsdorf, who I became friends with, and just here I was a White Sox fan when I was growing up at Pilsen, and now I'm on this bus. I said, what put me here? How did I get here? I mean, it was an amazingly emotional ceremony for me, amazingly emotional ride. And that was the number one thing in my life, just being on that bus at that particular time, a sea of people, such a happy day. And I could almost feel, I could almost feel Maggie next to me, which was really, really powerful.
That's really sweet. I grew up with my grandfather being a Sox fan when Harry was with him, and was it Channel 44 that had him on, and my grandfather's black and white little tiny TV with the broken coat hanger helping with the antenna and changing the channel with the pliers, and then my husband and his family, White Sox fans. It's really exciting. It was a really exciting day in 2005, but that's very sweet that you felt Maggie's spirit there with you.
Well, I tell you, the national anthem, I cover the games, of course, here in U.S. Cellular, and that was emotional. You never know what's going to hit you. I mean, you could be walking along the street and think of something, but Josh Groban sang the national anthem, and I just, there were tears coming down my face through the whole anthem. And a lot of people felt the same way about relatives who had passed, obviously, and were big White Sox fans. A lot of people visited graves and put White Sox banners on the graves. There was you think of people who were gone, and I was one of them.
Rich, please understand that your work here over these past 48 years is greatly appreciated. There's a lot of people whose lives were changed just by the way you reported on sports in the city. So we will miss you greatly.
Well, I think the most important thing about my life was the two books. The sports was great, but Back in the Game is out there now. My Maggie can get them on Eckhart's Press. And it's 95% of my life is in those books. And I let it all hang out because I wanted people to understand what Maggie went through, number one, the hero that she was, and also then my resurgence when I met April. So if you put your life out there, you know, Jackie Robinson once said that the only value of a life, or the importance of a life, is the effect it has on other lives. And if you think about it, that's what you're left with. You know, you're, when you die, everything, your money goes, everything's to somebody else. But if you impacted somebody, Dave impacted me, I impacted Dave, other people in the business impact, and that's the way it goes. That's the way it should be. And you carry that with you to your grave, and it's really a positive thing.
This guy's been on hold, and I got to let him tell you how much you mean to him. Kevin, you have 30 seconds. We have to run. Go.
All right, I will be quick. Bill and Winnie, this is great. Rich, I just want to share with you, I'm a big fan of the radio, but I'm a big fan of TV. And just what you've just said in the last few minutes, you embody the love of sports. And I can always remember that you were always, even before the Hawks were big, you always covered everything, you know, much more than what they do today, some of the guys that, you know, focus on the big-time stuff. And what you shared with us, with your experiences, and your sports experiences, your life experiences, all the way through your tragedies and things like that. I'm so proud and grateful that I ever had the experience to listen to you. And when they say that Rich is doing the sports at night, I'm like, all right, awesome.
All right. So thank you so much. Thank you very much. And thanks to everybody who's followed me over the years and watched me or listened to me on radio. I really appreciate your support. And, I will take that with me when I retire.
Thanks, Kevin. Rich, a pleasure. The best of luck in everything you do. We really have loved everything you've given us over the years, so thank you.
Well, I've got till June 15th, so I'll be around.
All right,
and
perfect.
Then afterwards, when you have the extra time, will you come in the studio and hang with us for a little bit?
Anytime.
All right.
And will you still take my calls?
Yeah, I will. It's a given.
I don't know. The way he laughed, Dave, I'm not positive. Yeah, the way sure. Rich laughed. Yeah.
Best of luck.
Thanks, Rich. That's okay. Rich King, everybody. Thanks, Dave, for stopping in on
Thank
this.
You.
Really appreciate it. We're going to take a break, and then Steve has the news. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Look who's here, Bill.
It's our friend Patrick McDonald, who comes to talk about movies with us. He's a film critic for HollywoodChicago.com. And filmautonomy.com, also the chief guide over at Chicago Film Tour, is a great thing for people who both live in the city or are visiting the city, and they can get in touch with you there at chicagofilmtour.com.
Please do, yes. And, you know, the mild winter weather we're having, perfect for a private tour, so...
Excellent. And for people who don't know, these are various places in and around the city where films have been made over the years.
Yes, and we show.
Do you have a bus, or do you take people in your own car?
Yes, I'm willing to do that.
Oh, all right.
It will be an Uber, but
that's fine.
Yes,
so all the movies that were filmed in and around the Chicago metro area.
Yes, and we show the video, and then we show you the place. Pretty cool.
I got to do this. I know I keep saying it, but I really will.
You have to.
Especially that Blues Brothers.
Do you do bachelorette parties?
Yes, we do.
Wouldn't that be fun?
I remember we did a bachelorette party once, and they took the Blues Brothers option. I don't know why. and we got stuck because it was the Bud Billiken parade up on the
south
didn't
care,
side
did
with
they?
The bus full of. No, they did not care, and it was quite fun. Actually.
That sounds like a good time, so, Patrick. A lot's being made out of the Oscar controversy.
Yes.
Everybody's talked about this for the last couple of weeks. But we wanted to talk something about Oscars with you, and that is that they're talking about possibly extending some categories, making a few new categories in the
yes,
Academy Awards.
This is one way they can add that diversity. And a lot of, I think, and I wanted to start with this one, Bill, because I'm sure you're going to be interested in it, best comedy.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think they should have a best comedy category?
Nope.
No,
you
why?
Don't?
Nope, because I think it should be part of what they call best picture, best motion picture. Ooh. Comedies rarely win. They're few and far between
yes.
winning for best. But I just think a movie really has to be good to reach that higher echelon, and I would love to see them keep it the way it is.
Okay, that's interesting. A traditionalist. The last pure comedy, I think, to have won.
Can I guess?
Go ahead.
Is it Annie Hall?
Yes, sir. 77. But I also brought up some... You can argue that maybe American Beauty was a comedy.
Oh. That was not a comedy.
Oh, no. I'm
it was
not
a dark
sure.
comedy.
It was very dark.
It was a great movie.
How about Shakespeare in Love? That was kind of
yeah,
amusing.
Yeah, I guess you could call that a comedy, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's with Joseph Fiennes, the guy we've been talking about for the past few days, soon to portray Michael Jackson.
Which I cannot wait to see this movie now.
Yes.
Is this a big screen or television movie?
I think it's TV.
I think it's made for British television, I think.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
All right, mm-hmm. so now that's one of the ones they're looking at. Have a
yes.
separate, not just best picture, best motion picture, but best comedy. That's
correct.
One idea. What are the others?
Ensemble, the whole cast. Now, they do that in the SAG Awards.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, again, this would be a way to expand, you know, a perfect Straight Outta Compton would have been perfect for best
That's
ensemble.
An interesting idea.
Yeah.
I like that one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Best stunt.
That's... Boy, that's tough. So best individual stunt
they
or film
best
that has?
Gaffer,
best cunning
so
stunt,
don't they?
Sir.
Yeah, they do have best gaffer.
So they should have stunt.
I guess. I'm not sure. The Hal Needham Award.
Yes.
That was the stunt man for all the Burt Reynolds movies.
Here's
forever.
Something interesting. Best opening credits. You know,
no.
Star Wars would win that every
You're not
time.
Making these up?
I'm not.
Is that real?
Like what would be nominated, for instance?
James Bond
James
movies,
every
right?
Year the James Bond
well, then,
movies.
Then no, they just have a Bond category.
That's well, I mean, it's an interesting piece of art form. As we remember, Saul Bass was the great artist on that.
Yeah.
And, you know, you see the opening of To Kill a Mockingbird, which was a Bass. No, you're not into that.
No, that's a hard...
Now, here's a good one. Here's
all right,
a good
what?
One. Best first film.
For an actor?
No, for a director,
a director?
I would say.
Boy, that's a tough one.
No. No way.
I don't know if that warrants its own category.
That's the whole excitement about it is if a first-time actor does make it to the big time.
That's very true.
Well, you guys are hard to please.
But look what happens, Patrick, is every year when the Academy Awards are on, people moan and complain, and they go, it's
yes.
too long. They got to shorten it,
yes.
but then they want to make five new categories, six
well,
new
I
categories.
Well, I would
say
gaffer.
Yeah,
they
no
would
more
have
gaffers.
To, you know, they took off the Lifetime Achievement Awards, and when I was doing the research, somebody suggested bring back the Lifetime Achievement Awards.
I used to like
that. I liked that.
So did I.
Yeah.
I think the majority of people liked that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a good way to show one more lap around the track for
right.
a big star.
Yep.
I mean,
right.
you know, give it to Burt Reynolds. Burt.
He deserves
he
it.
He does deserve
he
it.
He deserves it.
How's
he, never
he doing?
Won. I don't think he's doing well.
Well,
poor
you know.
Guy.
I don't think so. Did he ever? He never won an Academy Award, did he?
Never. He was nominated, remember, for Boogie Nights.
Yeah, right.
And famously had a lot of problems
not
with
the longest
director.
Yard?
No, not the longest yard.
Longest yard's classic.
Nope.
Really?
Nope.
You know, the parallels to Watergate in that one, Bill.
Yep. too many to mention, isn't there? There's too many to mention. All right, let's do this. Let's take a quick break. Patrick McDonald is here, film critic for HollywoodChicago.com and FilmAutonomy.com. We'll pick this up in just a little bit. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Patrick McDonald is here, film critic for HollywoodChicago.com and FilmAutonomy.com, chief guide over at the Chicago Film Tour. Go to ChicagoFilmTour.com for more information. Before we get to this week's movies,
yes.
I have to ask you this. I finally saw The Revenant last weekend
okay.
and loved it. It was my favorite movie
all
of
right.
the year. I thought it was magnificent.
Excellent.
One of my daughters, Kylie, said she was afraid that animals were being harmed in the film without giving any spoiler alerts out.
Right.
There's a couple of scenes involving animals. where it looks like they're being injured, but I assured her that there's no way in the world they would allow that.
Traditionally in Hollywood, you always look for that end piece when there's animals in there in the credits,
Didn't notice.
She said at the end she stuck around to see if they posted that, and she didn't see it.
Hmm.
But they still can't do it, whether they post it or not, and with this being up for awards?
There's no way in the world. Everybody knows. There's a scene with a bear. Joseph Fine plays a bear, and he's magnificent as the bear.
Is it a black bear?
Yes, ironically. And
Kevin Hart is a smaller
Kevin
one.
Kevin Hart plays a lovable little bear.
Does he get eaten, I hope?
Yeah, I don't want to say. It's the surprise ending to the movie. But there's no way in the world that a major film or even a minor film would even take a chance and hurt an animal.
I'm interested to know which film really brought that to everybody's attention. And after that, they
shoot horses, don't they, I bet? Probably that one, don't you think?
That was for humans, not for animals.
That was a crazy dance marathon
movie.
Yes,
it was.
All right, so I will tell her that a professional, Patrick McDonald, said that there's no way.
Yes.
All right.
Card-carrying professional.
He's got a card to prove it. All right, there's a bunch of films opening this weekend, most notably The Finest Hours. This is the Chris Pine movie on the boat.
Yes, this is, and also in 3D, and... this is an old-fashioned, it looked like a studio picture from the 30s and 40s.
Yeah.
A very specific cast of archetypes, especially on the boat that they're going to rescue. I mean, they have Cookie and Joe and mm-hmm. the guy in the engine room. It's mm-hmm. just like they should have just cast it exactly like that. Very enjoyable. A very enjoyable afternoon matinee-type movie or evening if you... have a date. Even with the date, it's romantic enough. I mean, the lead actress reminded me of Myrna Loy.
Oh, really?
Interestingly enough, yes. And Pine was in the tradition of Spencer Tracy or Clark Gable in that role.
He's a handsome man, that
he
Chris
Pine.
He is
a very handsome man.
Yes.
I got to look him up.
Yeah.
Captain Kirk.
It reminded me, and I've not seen it, you have seen it, but it has the look of the movie The Perfect Storm, the George Clooney movie from years ago.
Yeah,
is it
somewhat.
That sort of a feel?
Yeah, it's set in 1952, and it involves a true story of a rescue of a tanker that has gone aground. And in 1952, they didn't have the tracking devices that we have today. So it was a real shot in the dark.
Yeah.
And that's what makes it interesting because we don't, I mean, obviously it's a true story. The outcome is known, but we don't know it. And it unfolds that way. So 4 out of 5 for that.
4 out of 5.
Yes.
What was lacking? Why didn't you give it 5 out of 5? What was missing?
Well, it in like a studio picture from 1940, mm-hmm. it tends to get a little, those stereotypes, those archetypes are not really characters. They're just representatives, I don't know.
It's funny how lately I've noticed there's several movies, I'll put Bridge of Spies in that same kind where even though they're being made
today,
there's something about it that has the look and feel of movies from long ago.
Right.
They talk like this? Say, what do you think about that?
Yes. Mid-Atlantic, I say.
Yes. All right, so you say 4 out of 5 for The Finest Hours. I don't know what Son of Saul is.
Son of Saul is the Golden Globe Best Foreign Language winner this year.
Yeah.
It is a Holocaust film.
Yeah.
And it is done in a square ratio rather than a widescreen ratio. Why? Because the camera focuses on the character of Saul through his entire journey through a concentration camp over a period of time. And in the background, everything is happening. The director did not want to go widescreen because he didn't want people to be distracted by what was going on behind Saul. He wanted to focus on Saul as the character. A very unique film.
I've never heard of anything like that before, that a director would say that. That's really interesting.
It was
that he
very
would
interesting.
Yeah.
The last film to do that was actually a Best Picture, The Artist, because they wanted to go back to that ratio that was... in the silent days.
Yeah, yeah.
So this was done for a specific reason, and it's unique in that sense. 3.5 out of 5. I thought the film was a little so sad and so harsh. It was rough for me.
What's the country of origin?
The country of origin. Good question. Oh, boy.
Wow, that's
all right. If you don't know, don't worry. I'm guessing it's... they didn't dub this movie, right? There are subtitles here. It's from Hungary?
Yes.
Subtitles?
Yes.
Okay. I just want to say to people, and Wendy, you're one of them because I just heard you make that noise. I know a lot of people who go, I'm not paying $11 to read a movie.
Das Boot was the last one I saw with subtitles.
But it's so, you forget 2 minutes in, people always go, I'm not going to go reading a movie. But 2 minutes in to a good movie with subtitles, you forget that you're watching a movie with subtitles.
I never had a problem with them, but then again, really? I'm a card-carrying professional.
Give it a chance. I know it seems like, oh, no, but it can be so worth it. Give subtitles a chance. That's all we're saying. And as we say it, the words are underneath our chins. We're being subtitled as well.
And here's one of the most unique things opening this week. The Academy Awards shorts over at the Landmark Cinema.
Wendy, you're wearing your Academy Awards shorts right now, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
More tweets to come on that. All right.
Well, this is always a good idea. I used to see this every year. I've missed the last couple of years. But it's all those films that you see nominated and you go, oh, I would love to see the short films or the animated films. You have a chance. They put them back to back.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And especially the animated films because they're spectacular on the big screen.
Yeah.
And short films is a particular art, you know, because they have to tell a story in a very truncated time. And sometimes that's an advantage for drama or comedy or whatever the categories is, and it's just an eclectic mix. So,
but harder for the director, obviously.
Yes, it can be, yeah. Although, you know, what we're seeing, we've seen this with the short films and with the animated films, a lot of the people that do these early on in their career, their goal, of course, is to get on to the bigger motion pictures, and
absolutely.
That happens quite often.
It's a calling card.
Yeah, yeah. All right, there's more award shows, by the way, other than the Oscars on
Woo-hoo!
February 28th. We've got the Screen Actors Guild Awards coming up on the 30th,
yep.
The Directors Guild on the 6th, the BAFTA Awards on the 14th,
take a BAFTA,
and then the Spirit Awards on the 27th.
My favorite.
Which one is usually the one, the telltale sign? Like if a movie wins this award, it goes on to win the Oscars. What would you say it is?
I think the Guild Awards are very important. The Screen Actors Guild, the Producers Guild, which was and the Directors Guild Awards. I think those are the ones.
The best predictors.
Really, yes, that really are the predictors because those are the same voting members.
Oh yeah,
the
they
Academy.
Would be, wouldn't they? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Patrick. We appreciate it. That's Patrick McDonald, film critic over at HollywoodChicago.com and FilmAutonomy.com. And, of course, you can see him at the Chicago Film Tours. ChicagoFilmTour.com is your best bet for that.
Starting April 1.
Thanks, Patrick.
We'll take a quick break. We've got some news and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Kim, we may need your help about something.
I'm here to serve.
Moments ago, we were talking to Patrick McDonald about films that were coming out, and there's a movie that opens tomorrow called The Finest Hours. The star of this movie is an actor named Chris Pine, and I mentioned him, and I said just in passing, when we were talking about Chris Pine, that is a handsome man. And then, Wendy, you said, I'm not sure who that is. And during the break there, you were looking him up to see who he is and what he's been in and what he looks like.
Kim, do you know who Chris Pine is? And if you don't, Google him.
No, I don't. But
Google him and
hit
images because I got to tell you, I mean, he's a fine-looking guy.
Yes.
But yeah.
It's nothing like when Bill goes, he is a handsome man. He wouldn't stop my time.
Is that just not your look? Is that not the kind of guy you like?
I don't know. I mean, he's a fine-looking guy, but I...
If he
Google
came in
home,
here right now, you
Chris Pine.
I think he's good-looking.
I don't see how anyone could not find him. I'm a guy, and I see him, and I go,
He looks a little like Josh Duhamel.
Yes, he does.
Yeah, doesn't he?
Yes, he does. Yes, he does.
And I think he's very good-looking.
I gotta say that...
You like more of a manly man, Wendy.
No, I like Keanu Reeves. I like
the
Seth
cool
Rogen. I know, what's wrong with me?
Now, Seth Rogen wouldn't be your typical good-looking man.
I love him. You know who else I find totally attractive? Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
I could see that. I could understand
but
that.
But when I guess, Kim, when I heard, like, Bill doesn't throw out compliments very easily. So when he goes, he's a good-looking man, I guess I expected, like, really a time stopper.
I saw Chris Pine on two different talk shows this week. He's, you know, he's making the rounds because this movie opens up. And he just sits there and he just exudes handsome. And I go, oh, man, what would it be like to look like a guy like that for a week, to just walk around and go, no matter where I go, I'm going to be the best looking guy. Wouldn't that be something to be Chris Pine for a week? And then you looked him up and you just go, eh.
Yeah, no, I have to disagree with you on this one, Wendy. He is a looker.
He's got like that.
His
with
features
the,
are soft, so maybe you don't like soft features.
I think they're harsh. I think I asked Kevin. You said, you know, you have classic good looks. Didn't you say that?
Classically handsome, yes.
He's classically handsome.
And Bill said, you know, he's got the jaw. You don't like that jaw.
He's got
like
what they call
Do-Right.
I think he is.
It's you know the phrase lantern jaw, where it's just like a strong.
Yes.
Right? He's got that
he
going.
Does.
Like Ryan Reynolds has that kind
he
of a thing.
He looks like Ryan Reynolds a
yeah,
little.
Yeah, there's a similarity.
Yeah, but there. I think he's better looking than Ryan Reynolds. To be
he's
honest.
He's good looking. All you right. know who his dad is, by the way? Remember on Chips, Robert Pine, who was like one of the guys, one of the cops there with the
Bill,
Chips?
Who besides you, anyone no. knows Eric
Estrada?
That's Chris
as far
Wilcox.
As I got
Larry Wilcox.
Oh, see?
And Eric Estrada. But then they had a friend, Robert Pine, who was also on the show, and that's his kid. He had like silvery grayish hair. He was the older Chip. He was the older Chip. Remember him?
Yeah, I like his looks better.
Really?
What?
Are you sure?
Was the mom famous too?
Was the mom was famous? Not. Okay. No.
This guy?
Yeah. That's...
Oh, he was in Prince's Diaries. I love that
he
movie.
Looks like Jim Stafford to me.
This... Yeah, he does look like, I don't like spiders and snakes like that guy. Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, he's a fine looking guy, but I mean, I guess I just expected something like,
what? Like who would be the guy that if I said that and you'd look at it and you go, boy, did you nail that? Look at how good looking I'm
going to say here.
Brad Pitt.
Is it Brad Pitt?
Brad Pitt's beautiful.
Yeah. He is.
Yeah. I'm trying to think.
I like Keanu Reeves.
That's
Clooney.
Clooney. Yeah.
Wendy, I just don't think we can talk handsome men with you.
Yeah. I think all of our handsome men talk must stop
but
today.
But can I just say that's what makes this world go around?
Of course it does. But a guy like that, like I used this analogy before. If you stopped 100 people and showed them a picture of Chris Pine and you said, really handsome or not really handsome?
Well, he's not ugly.
No, he's not ugly.
Like you think Keira Knightley is, you know, God's gift to Earth.
She is stunning.
I think she's
really
cute.
Boy, is she pretty.
But I've seen way prettier women, too.
But with her, you get the British accent. You get the flawed teeth, which is her way of saying, yes,
what?
I'm beautiful, but look, my teeth are still bad. Her teeth are not good. But I would be willing, in a parallel universe.
What, do you have a life-size cutout of her? Where you
That's a possibility. If they made such a thing, I'd probably order one or two.
You know who's really pretty, and I just saw the movie last night, and
who?
I don't know her name, is the star of Brooklyn. She is just naturally
beautiful.
Saoirse
Ronan is her
name.
Yes,
she is so pretty.
She's on your list, too?
She's, I have a foreign list. I have a foreign list, and she's on that
list. Is she
list.
On there?
Yeah.
She should be.
She's from Ireland. She's very pretty. She's got, her eyes are like just translucent. I don't know how they made her. It's
just
amazing.
Gorgeous, yeah.
Very pretty.
All right. Well, I would like to find the best looking actors from 2016.
What about your
and
this one I shouldn't even bring up because Kevin is all our own producer. Kevin is also always compared to them. But the Hemsworth boys seem to have somehow lucked out.
Kevin looks a lot like the
it's like the missing
main,
Hemsworth,
the main Hemsworth. But I think
Liam
Kevin's better looking.
Chris,
I can see that.
You
Although,
see that,
don't
right?
Go back to Miley Cyrus, Kevin.
Yeah. One of the Hemsworths was engaged to Miley Cyrus. Then they broke up, and now they're reengaged.
I think she's kind of pretty before she got all wacky.
Don't do it,
Miley.
Kevin.
Yeah,
don't do it.
She looked cute as Hannah Montana. She just—it's
yeah.
You know what it is. If you don't like the person, they all of a sudden. That's why beauty is only skin deep, guys. Because you got to get to know the person. Because Miley
right.
Cyrus, we don't like her actions, and that makes
right.
her less attractive.
Once she went to the porn star hair is when she like when the girls were little they would watch her on Hannah Montana and
yeah,
I just
she
went,
was cute.
Eh, she's
What's
fine.
Porn star hair?
That real like
short
like platinum blonde
spiky.
Short yeah like it just
Don't women in pornos have long hair?
I've never seen one, Kevin.
You are such
I don't know. I wouldn't
well,
know.
I probably shouldn't Google it, actually.
Many
no,
do.
Don't. Some
I
of them
thought
do.
They had long, sexy hair because they're trying to look sexy,
right.
So I don't understand the porn hair.
Well, it's just, I'm trying to think of how our friend Seika.
You
over,
want to say, like, rocker chick hair.
Right. Well, yeah, but there was
like Lita Ford in her heyday.
Yeah. Angry hair. You know what I mean? Like hair that it could beat you up if it wanted to, you know? That kind of just deliberate hair, like, I'm tough. Look at my hair.
Spiky.
That kind of, yeah.
But that's not porn star hair.
But there was a time, I've read in books, that there were women in the business. Remember when we worked with Seika at The Loop? She had that kind of hair.
She
not the Seika virus.
She had... That's Zika.
Oh, it is. Sorry.
God. Zika, whatever. She didn't have that short hair, did she? It was long.
For a little while. Yeah, for a little while she did. And when Melanie Griffith played a porn star in a
Something
in a
Wild.
Movie, in, no, not in Something Wild. Because
her hair was short in Something Wild.
There was another one where she played an adult film actress and she had real short blonde platinum hair. You know, but when I say blonde porn star hair, you know what I mean, right?
I guess now I do. I can't find the list of, you know what? We could go 2015 because we're just newly into 2016.
Yeah.
Can we take a break and talk about the world's best looking actors?
Yeah.
Do we have to go world? Yeah. Well, let's do it.
Yeah, probably. All right. We'll figure out who's handsome and who's not. That's coming up next. If you want to jump in, 312-981-7200. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WTC.
Body Double was the movie you were talking about with Melanie Griffith.
That's the one.
She had short,
is there a
spiky
picture?
Hair. No, but someone texted us.
It is.
Thank
it's Body Double.
That. We're talking about, it all started with Chris Pine. Do you pine for Chris Pine? You said he was attractive because he's in this movie, what's it called?
It's called The Finest Hours. It's a boat rescue movie. And he
looks
is
good.
He's a handsome guy. And I, a quick disclaimer, anytime we talk about people and how good they either look or don't look, people call and text and go, that's very superficial.
It
yes,
is.
Yes, it is. Yes,
it is. It is. But why do magazines put together the list of the hottest people? I mean, I'm sorry.
Because it sells. People want to know who's handsome and who is ugly.
Well, that's not a nice way of putting it.
People want to know who's handsome and who's not quite as handsome.
That's better.
That's better.
But you mentioned when you said, "Oh, that Chris Pine's a good-looking guy." I looked him up and
got sick to your stomach.
No, I didn't. And he's a fine-looking guy. I just he's not all that.
All right.
He's not so Raven.
I guess he's not so Raven.
Kim Gordon got into the fray. She said, "Yes, he's fine-looking." You know, Glamour put together the 100 sexiest men in the world for 2015. We don't have time to go through all 100 of them this half, so we'll finish up this.
All right, that'll be our whole last 2 hours.
But the top one, this is number 100. Okay,
right.
We're going backwards.
Yeah,
and this is it. Ashton Kutcher, he is gorgeous.
Where is he on the list?
100.
He's number 100. Think about that. You're as good looking as Ashton Kutcher, but according to them, there's still 99 guys ahead of you.
Is this just men on this list?
Yes.
Wow. Number 100.
It's nice just to make the top 100. That would be a nice thing, but...
What are the requirements here? You got to be like
I don't
a celebrity?
Know.
Got to be handsome.
Glamour's 100 sexiest
How do we get
men
on
in the
list?
World.
I want to get
you
on this list.
Got to campaign harder next year, Kev.
Kellen Lutz is 99. I don't know who that is.
He's a model turned actor.
He's cute.
He's a good-looking guy.
He doesn't... Maybe it's the big square jaw I don't like. Jeremy Renner.
But don't... Yeah, people love Jeremy Renner.
Who likes him?
You don't
really?
Think he's good-looking?
Oh, yeah.
Really
he's
not?
He's got the jaw.
I think you like the jaw.
Yeah.
He's Hawkeye. Not in MASH, in The Avengers. He plays Hawkeye.
Is that a representative picture?
Yeah, the picture you're showing me of Jeremy Renner, that's how he always looks. Like he just had a lemon. He just
James Franco, I don't find him to be
You don't
that
think
attractive.
James Franco's good looking.
But see, that's what that's why it involves more than just looks. It's what makes the person
depth, right?
It is.
Sure.
Come on, I find Seth Rogen to be attractive.
He's cute, you know, and kind of in a cute way, but I don't think he's like hot.
I am crushing on him big time.
On Seth Rogen.
Yeah,
Garrett, you would take Seth Rogen.
That's one of those where, you know, it's personality that you like.
But that, see what it does?
So you have a chance, again. It's,
I'm on the dating
in
game,
this
say.
Right, you're on the dating game. Your world now doesn't exist. You don't have Jimmy, you don't have a family. You're single, and Seth Rogen is sitting in one chair, and Chris Pine is sitting in the other, and you would choose
Seth Rogen in a
Rogen.
Heartbeat.
Wow. All right.
All right, well, that's good. Then you can leave Chris Pine for me.
All right, just some of the more popular ones that I don't even know. Oh, God, I don't know any of these people. Joseph Gordon-Levitt is 92, see?
All right, that's
these
not
are
bad.
Some, John Hamm, I find him to be very attractive.
That's a
yes.
perfect-looking guy.
Yes. I guess he's got the jaw, too.
He's perfect-looking.
He's way better than Chris Pine.
Well, you know, neither of them are hideous.
They're not hideous, I'm just saying.
And they're both
everybody...
very talented actors, too. So
Brad
there is
Pitt
some
is
depth.
Number 85 on the list.
Wow,
only
85. Slipping.
Maybe
wow.
This isn't in
his stock is slipping.
Although he's getting weirder looking now too.
Well,
Adam Lambert.
Yeah, he shouldn't be up there, no. Should he?
No, John Mayer with his big fish lips. I think he's a great musician.
Yeah, I
he's
agree
totally talented. He looks
go
good
up
on
to the
stage.
Top 10.
Kim wants top 10. You, I think the two of you are the only women that John Mayer has not dated. By the way,
that's probably true.
Adam Levine.
You don't see that. He's a good looking guy.
Oh, he's good looking. Come on, Wendy.
He's very talented.
I don't like his musical ability.
Oh, man.
Matthew McConaughey, 75. We're still, I got to go to the top 10.
There's that many guys better looking than Matthew McConaughey.
I have a feeling we're not going to know anybody in the
Jackman.
Top 10.
Hugh Jackman's 60 something.
And he can sing Broadway show tunes to you while you hold hands. Wouldn't that be fun?
Justin Timberlake is down in the 50s.
You know, I don't think he's that good looking.
Extremely talented.
Yes,
not
very
bad looking.
Colin Farrell's 50. He is good looking.
He seems dangerous.
That's kind of why I like
you
him.
You like
Bill.
That? He's dangerous.
That's. I think that's cheap. That's why he's up there, because he's got that.
He got danger points. He did, Wendy, admit it. Colin, it is. It's cheap. He got danger points. They
I'm
gave
okay
him,
with that.
He's not that. I don't think he's that handsome.
Hey, Shia LaBeouf would be on my list,
no,
too. I think he's adorable.
Oh, so you like crazy?
He is crazy.
Allegedly. Careful.
No,
you like Teddy Bearish. You know, Shia LaBeouf, Seth Rogen.
Seth Rogen's really the only Teddy Bearish.
You should date Winnie the Pooh.
Or Ted.
Oh, bother.
Ted's a little dirtier.
Yeah. Chris Pratt, what do you think? I think he's cute.
Yeah.
Channing Tatum,
I agree.
What? Really?
See?
Yeah.
That's shocking. I'm surprised by that.
Leonardo DiCaprio.
What if it was Channing Tatum in a bear outfit? Then
I don't
maybe
want the bear.
Not a teddy bear, no?
Leonardo DiCaprio. Exactly.
Leonardo DiCaprio just gets an That's it.
David Beckham, no.
Oh,
Wendy, come on.
Women
guys,
all
sorry
over the globe and in outer space love
David.
He's
got David a hot bod, but his face, you know?
Really?
I think he's got a beautiful face, too.
All right, well, see, that's what makes everybody.
And you know what he named his kid? You know what one of his kids' names is? Romeo. I think you're
for
begging for you better be a very handsome guy if your name is Romeo.
We're up to 38 Robert Downey Jr. I think he's good looking.
Over Chris Pratt? Come on.
Oh yeah.
No.
Don't embarrass us.
All right, hang on. Let me just get to the top 10.
He has a lot of
really
baggage.
Quick.
Yeah, he does. But a nice rebound story.
But.
A really good rebound story. He was in bad shape.
Yeah, no, he did. He really did come back.
Who's Charlie Hunnam?
He was the guy who
Hunnam, I barely know him.
He was supposed to be in 50 Shades of Grey.
Oh, Chris Hemsworth, number 13.
All right.
Kevin, you're better looking than he is. And
see?
He's good
get
looking.
Get me on that list.
Well, no. You're not going to be
Wendy,
on the
you
list.
Must know somebody.
Come on, get me on there.
Come on.
You're not getting on the list.
You know somebody.
Okay, you're giving me mixed signals here.
Get
you're telling
Kevin
me I'm better
well,
looking.
Well, no, you are. But, you know, I told Billy he was better looking than Chris Pine.
You should get your prescription renewed because
Johnny Depp
up
is number 12 again.
Isn't he little?
He seems grimy,
like little.
Oh, jealous! I hear that, Bertrand. You could
a little oily.
He does seem a little.
I like him.
Like yeah, maybe.
I like him.
Doesn't I thought Chris died in that boat crash? Doesn't he in the movie?
Who's this?
Chris Pine?
No, it's fictional.
It's not true.
No, it's all fictional.
Glamour's 100 sexiest men in the world. We have a minute and a half.
Well, there's
Steve,
three
so
of them
down
here.
This is the top. Glamour isn't aware, you guys. We
not
know
yet,
that,
not
here in Chicago.
They're not yet.
All right, top 10 according to Glamour's Glamour Magazine, 100 Sexiest Men in the World, 2015. Number 10, Pharrell Williams.
What?
He's cute.
He's
yeah
got
he's
that
cute.
Arby's
he's
hat on all the
Jared
time.
Jared Leto.
Too pretty.
Yeah, way too pretty.
I like him.
I do, too.
Jamie Campbell Bauer.
Oh, Jamie Campbell Bauer.
Who's
Bauer
that?
Who
I don't
is
even
that
know who that is.
He's number 3.
No,
no
number
he's number 8.
Eight.
Oh. Harry Styles.
From One Direction?
Seven.
Get out of here.
No
he's
way.
He's not even the best
no
looking
way
guy in One Direction.
Even Theo I think James? Kevin's better looking than him.
Theo James, who's that? Number 6. He's good looking.
I don't know who that
I
is.
I don't know who any of these people are. Henry Cavill.
Henry Cavill plays Superman in the Superman movies. Just eh?
Robert Pattinson is number 4.
Ooh.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
You guys turned on Robert Pattinson.
Tom Hiddleston.
Tom,
number 3. Don't know who that is.
He's been in a bunch of movies. No?
He's weird
doesn't
looking
do it for you? Yeah, he is. He's
unusual
looking.
He's got a nutty
looking
professor
look. Yeah, he's unusual looking. Not classic good looks.
Benedict Cumberbatch is number 2.
I could see that, I guess.
Yeah.
No. He's no? Only because he's eccentric.
He's yeah. also weird looking.
He's a little different looking.
He's got like a bug face or something.
And
get over it, Kevin.
Jamie Dornan. I don't even know who these people are.
Me either.
Jamie Dornan.
Got a good one.
Is he the guy?
And Ashton Kutcher gets 100. I don't think so.
Is he in 50 Shades of Grey? Is that the guy from 50 Shades of Grey? I think it is.
He just looks like a guy to me.
Yeah, that's just a guy.
Just a guy.
He was in the ABC series Once Upon a Time.
Oh.
All right. Well, it just goes to show you that looks are only...
And 50 Shades, you're right.
Yeah, that's the guy from 50 Shades.
Call GQ.
I'm starting to like him better now that I know he was in there.
We'll find out what number 101 on the list Steve Bertrand has planned for his show next. Stick around. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Tim, thanks so much. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder here to give you a show that Steve Bertrand pretended to be very excited to hear. Did you hear him earlier?
He wasn't pretending. He was.
Is that genuine? I couldn't tell.
He was trying to pass it off to us so we could promote what we have coming up, and I always lose my show schedule,
yeah.
So I couldn't promote it. What do we have coming up, Bill?
Actor Barry Gordon, whose name may not resonate immediately with you, but you know who he is. We have him on because, sadly, we lost Abe Vigoda a few days ago, and Barry Gordon played one of his kids on the television show Fish. So we would imagine it'd be fun to hear some stories about what it would be like to work with Abe Vigoda.
I wonder when the last time is that they hung out.
The great question.
Well, I don't know. But I mean, I'm just, you know, pondering now.
Yeah.
Because I wonder if they kept in touch. I would keep in touch with Abe Vigoda.
I would. Definitely would.
The sunken-eyed character actor.
As it said in his obituary.
That's terrible.
I know it is. Kim did a story in the news. I don't know if I can't see in the newsroom to see.
She bailed.
Kim has quit. Kim yes, has handed in her badge.
After the crosstalk we did with Bertrand, right. She's done.
She said, I don't need this aggravation.
Steve usually comes back pretty quickly, but I did hear the story you're speaking of.
There's a debate going on, and it's now reached a court case, and it's a strange condition. It's panhandlers who say that they have the right to panhandle outside of buildings like the Daily Center, that it's their right, it's their freedom of speech. If they want to go and ask people for money, it's America. We have that option if we choose to. And then there's plenty of other people who say, oh, no, I'm protected from this. If I want to go in and there's a lot of people who work, obviously, at the Daily building there. If they want to go in and out of work and not have people hit them up for money, they should be afforded that privilege of not having that happen. I'm not sure where I stand on that. I see both sides. I've luckily never been in the panhandle situation where I need to ask people for money at this point. I've never had that happen. But, you know, life is tricky. Things happen.
Well, you know what it is? What bothers me is I don't know why they're there.
Well, and as opposed makes, to...
Well, a lot of people will say, oh, just go get a job. Why would you do this? Well, a lot of people are just in the catch-22 phase. Maybe they have some mental illness. Maybe they have nowhere to live. So how are they going to clean up and put some nice clothes on to go interview for a job? It's a catch-22 situation.
There's a guy that I see every single morning, Monday through Friday, when I drive in from my house to work. There's a guy who looks just like Mark Ruffalo, by the way. I know it's not Mark Ruffalo, but he looks like Mark Ruffalo.
You sure it's not a role he's playing?
No, because this guy's been there for a long time, and Mark Ruffalo's been doing movies. He doesn't have time. So every day when I drive in, I see this guy more days than not, and I know this is a judgment thing, but he's dressed better than me on almost every day.
Bill, listen to what you just said.
I know, it's easier to dress better than me. But he's there when I come to work, and many days he's there, not every day, but he's there when I come home from work. He's at that same intersection asking for money. And I think to myself, and I know this is an awful thing to think, but I go, boy, if you're putting in hours like this, and you're just outside on a street corner begging for money, that shows some determination. Why can't you translate that into a profession of some sort? Why can't you get a job if you're willing to put in 6, 8, 10-hour days?
Did you ever think maybe he has no place to go?
It's possible. But he's wearing different clothes every day. He looks better. He does. He dresses better than I do. That's got to mean something. Can't he go? Isn't there some place where he can go and say, I'm not afraid of the hours. Look, I've been...
Where, though? Where do you go? Where do you start?
There's got to be someplace.
And
there's
this
gotta be.
Panhandlers sue to beg at popular Chicago Square. Federal civil trial pitting two panhandlers against one of the nation's largest sheriff's departments got underway on Monday in a case stemming from a lawsuit that alleges the men were improperly stopped from begging at a popular Chicago Square. I've never heard it called that way.
It's very popular.
Chicago Square.
Yeah, we call it the popular Chicago Square.
Kim Pindak and Sam Phillips claim they lost up to $10 a day over 4 years, which adds up.
Is that what a panhandler would average, honestly, is spending an entire day in front of Daily Plaza? Would you get $10 a day? You got to get more than that, wouldn't you?
I would imagine. Although, think about it, Bill. You see the same people every day. When I worked at the other station with you, but not with you, same station, I would come in at about 4 in the morning.
Yeah.
And I would walk across a bridge over the Chicago River every morning, and there was this guy and this girl that were always there. And you know me, I will talk to anyone who will listen. So I kind of started talking to him, because the girl had like a big Cubs jersey on.
Yeah.
That's expensive.
Yes.
So I said, what's your deal? Do you, you know, each day I would say hi. I wouldn't give them money every day. Every once in a while I did. Sometimes I'd leave and wouldn't want my lunch, so I would give them the lunch that I had hand-packed, and they took it, and we talked. Her name is Veronica.
Yeah.
And I said, what's your deal? Do you sleep here? Because that's a pretty nice Cubs jersey. And she's like, no, I go home to sleep. I kind of split a place with someone, staying at my uncle's right now, and I come out here to try and make some money.
Yeah.
And I said, well, have you tried to work? You know? And she said, no, I just do this. And I didn't really ask too many more questions, but I didn't judge her either. I mean, I like going to work. I like having a purpose every day.
But it's not, I don't even think it has to do with judging so much as just the semantics of figuring out if you're willing to put in those long hours. And it's not easy. I mean, you know how the weather is here most of the year. It's inclement weather. So if you're putting in, like the guy who looks like Mark Ruffalo, like a week ago when it was zero, he's out there. I'm thinking, boy, you're going to be out in this kind of weather all day.
He has no other place to go. Why would he be out in that?
I don't know. Another lady, last year when I was without a car for 4 months, and I would take the train in and I would end up at Oglevie Station. And there was a lady a block away from Oglevie Station. Again, I would see her when I would get here in the morning and when I would go back home. She was dressed impeccably every day. She was dressed fantastically. And I almost wanted to say to her, because I would give money every once in a while, not a lot, but a dollar here and a few dollars there. And I think to myself, for the average person who passes by these people, I would think that the money, like in my head, I'm like, you should really give this money to somebody who looks like they really need everything. Like, she was dressed fantastically every day.
But I want to know her backstory.
Right. What happened that got you from there to here? Yeah.
I mean, because that's it. Bill wants to jump in on this. 312-981-7200. Bill, what do you think?
Hey, they said they made $10 a day they're missing out on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At least $10 an hour. You think they're going to stand there all day for $10?
One of the guys, Kim Pindak, 63, said during a break in the trial that he was forced to supplement his income by begging because all but $30 of his $750 a month federal disability assistance went toward paying living expenses at an assisted living facility. So there, he has a place to live, but he doesn't have a job pay that money.
Well, that could be true, but I would say the majority of them are doing it because they're not paying taxes, and it's tax-free money.
I don't know that that's why.
They want to do a 1099, let them beg.
Well, no. I mean, but that's, I can't imagine just so they don't have to report their income, they would take to the streets. That seems like an awfully crazy measure.
Very lucrative. But they, like, when they follow these people sometimes, they follow them to their homes in Hoffman Estates or Barrington.
There are some people. There was a guy years ago. When I just started in radio, I worked at the Loop and I would work overnight. So I would park by a church near the Hancock Building. And very frequently, I would see this African-American guy in a wheelchair who would hassle me almost every weekend night. Hey, give me some money. I don't have any money. Sorry, I'm working, you know, overnights in the middle of the night. I don't really have money.
Right.
And he would yell at me and swear at me. And then I swear to you, I would see him on a different night, take the wheelchair and put it in his car.
Really?
So then you get mad. But there are people like that. Bill, thank you for calling. I just, you know, go be a wait person and get tips that way, or clean houses where you can get cash. Don't stand on the street to not pay income tax on it.
If you can, talk to Steve real quick, because I was going to bring this up, and he knows exactly what I'm referring to. Steve, hi. Thanks for calling us. Tell your story. It's one I'm familiar with, and I was going to mention, but go ahead.
Yeah, there was an article in the Tribune where a fellow would, you know, do the panhandling. His chauffeur would drive him in, drop him off. He'd spend the day panhandling, and then the chauffeur would pick him up, and he'd go home to his house.
So explain that. Mm-hmm. What is there something not right there? Because why would you do that?
Well, apparently he made an awful lot of money panhandling. He was talking about over 100 a day.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. I mean, I see when I'm at this intersection where the guy who looks like Mark Ruffalo but is not Mark Ruffalo is at, I see, like, when I'm stopped at a red light, I see a couple of guys, and I've done it myself. Here's $1 or $2, and that's just in the 3 minutes that I'm there. So what is that?
And some people give tens and twenties,
right.
I'm sure.
So what does that come to? And I know this, in the end, you go, well, this is terrible. People are scamming the system. But there's plenty of homeless people walking around who really need that money. It's just sad that some people are taking advantage of it.
That's true.
It's shocking to me that they take advantage of it, because that's got to just be the biggest, huge bruise to your pride to stand on the streets and beg for money.
I would think, yeah. Yeah, yeah. But I do remember that story, Steve. I remember it well. It was an eye-opener. It really was.
Thanks, Steve.
It sure was.
Take care.
Quick little break, and we're going to talk to somebody who says that he was homeless, and maybe some tricks that we can all learn from. Mm-hmm. It's Bill Leff, Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN.
All right, we're going to get the news from Steve, and then we're going to talk to actor Barry Gordon, one of those guys that you've seen in all kinds of TV shows and movies over the years. He played one of the five kids, the Fish Kids on Fish, Abe Vigoda's TV series. So we wanted to check in with Barry and find out what it was like to work with the great Abe Vigoda. That'll come up right after the news.
Meantime, we were talking about there's a case in court. A couple of panhandlers said that they've lost money up to $10 a day, 4 days a week, over a four-year period because of the sheriff's department that wouldn't let them panhandle in front of, where was it? What's the Chicago Square?
I think that's the area that is the Daily Plaza,
yeah,
like just the common area around there, right?
The suit involved Daily Plaza, I think.
Okay, thank you very much. Because according to this article, it said Chicago Square, and I've never heard anybody say that before. Randy is on the line with us. And Randy, you were homeless for some time?
Yes, I was.
Sorry to hear that.
Well, me too.
Things are better now, though, we hope, right?
They're getting better.
Okay, good.
May
That's
I
good news.
Ask a question, and you don't have to answer if you don't want to, but I think we all are curious. How did that happen? How did you? They say you're a paycheck away from homelessness. How did it happen for you?
Well, I ended up getting divorced, and then I had to leave my home. And after getting through all the courts and lawyer's fees,
it left you with nothing.
Nothing. And I couldn't pay the hotel anymore, so I had to leave pretty much most of what I had, and then on the street.
It's awful. And,
so you slept on the street?
Yes.
What about this is my biggest problem, where do you go to the bathroom? I'm sorry, that's what I would be worried about. In the alley.
In the alley, that's it.
Showering?
You're always walking. One of the things I learned was, and it was passed along to me from someone in a shelter, an overnight shelter. It was really, really cold. And I was up in Lakeview by Addison and Halstead. And he said, look, hey, Randy, you got to go over to this park house. They got a swimming pool. And you sign up for an adult swim. And, you know, you could take a shower there.
And it was free, obviously. The adult swim was free?
Yes, it was. And I would actually take a swim so I can really loosen up muscles in that, because you do so much walking. And, you know, you got to hit certain spots maybe where a bunch of other people are buying for work, like, say, Belmont and Milwaukee at the Shell station there. And maybe somebody, a contractor, comes by and, you know, you get selected to go to work. And if he likes your work, he'll keep you on for a few days, and of course he does pay cash, but it allows you some money so you can at least eat and, you know, maybe And the only thing you're carrying is your backpack and maybe 2-3 sets of clothes and an extra pair of shoes. And when you need to, you got a few quarters, you go to a local laundromat and you put them in the washer and dry them, and you're on your way again.
So you wanted to work. Was I right in assuming it's kind of a catch-22 situation? Like, who's going to hire you when you don't have fresh clothes or you appear clean and it just overwhelms you? Is that how it happens?
Well, I mean, you know, I would always have clean clothes, and, you know, I want it to work, yes, of course, but you have no base of operation, and, you know, you need to get your feet on some solid footing where you got a place to shower and eat,
and sleep.
So that, you know, you can go to work every day and get a job, you know, but if you don't have that, what do you put down as an address?
That's a great question. How are you doing now? Do you have some place you're living? You working?
I do some sporadic work and whatnot. But, another Vietnam buddy of mine took me under his wing and helping me out.
That's one of, this is obvious, but I will say it anyway, that's one of the saddest turns in all of this, is somebody who served the country and then comes back and still has to deal with some sort of homelessness. That's as tragic as can be.
Well, I know the VA has programs, but you don't want to feel regimented like you were back in the military. And, you know, so they take away your freedom in that regard, so to speak, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, you just don't.
God bless you, Randy.
I don't want it. I don't want it. So,
we're hoping for a full rebound for you, Randy. We really are.
I'm pushing. I'm 63, so I don't know how long I'm carrying on, you know?
63 is the new 43. You're good.
Well, do a lot of walking, get a lot of sore feet.
All right. Well, take care of yourself, Randy. Seriously, do whatever you need to do, but make it work for you, okay?
Yep. I listen to you guys all the time, and I love your show.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you so much, Randy.
Take care.
Have a great day.
All right, you too.
I can't. I'm going to be crying thinking about Randy now forever. There's a lot of people like Randy. You heard him. He said he wants to work. Then there are people who don't want to work. How do you figure out the difference?
I don't know. At the core of this is the question, and I still don't know the answer to it. I don't know which side is right and which side is wrong. It's people who are suing saying, it's freedom of speech. If we want to go and panhandle or ask people for money, we should have that ability.
They should be able to do that.
I guess so, but you can understand the other side of the argument of people who say, hey, we're buying space in a building, and part of the money that we give your building is protection where we don't get hassled in and out of work.
Welcome to the big world.
I know.
Our bosses can't protect us from everything that life may deal with us. And, yeah, it's uncomfortable when you see someone out there begging. It's supposed to be.
Right. All right. Another problem that we did not solve.
I know. You know, I started to realize that we talk about these subjects that are thought-provoking and heartbreaking sometimes.
Hopefully,
but
yeah.
We have no solution ever to
right.
it.
Right.
So why do we do this?
One of the kids from Fish will be on next, Barry Gordon. One of the kids from Abe Vigoda's series Fish. We will solve that. We'll try to solve that. Steve has the news in just a little bit. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. You recognize this theme song? I hope you do.
You betcha.
The theme from Fish.
Bunnies.
The spinoff to Barney Miller.
What, Fish?
We got the sad news the other day that Abe Vigoda had passed away, one of the greatest character actors of all time. Abe Vigoda had died, and we said, let's find somebody who knows Abe Vigoda, who worked with Abe Vigoda, and immediately the name Barry Gordon came to mind. Barry Gordon has the most impressive resume of any human being on the planet right now. He's appeared on Leave It to Beaver, All in the Family, one of the voices of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Donatello.
The best one.
The best of the Ninja Turtles, hands down. And we're not sucking up to you, Barry. We mean it. Wendy and I have fought about this. Donatello's the best. He played Charlie on Fish, and he's here right now. I've wanted to meet you my whole life. Barry, how are you?
I'm fine, Bill. How are you?
Excellent.
Hi, Wendy.
Hi there, Barry. This is an honor. We were so saddened to hear the news about Abe Vigoda. Bill and I, as everyone listening, has been such a fan of Abe Vigoda's. And it was so sad that, like, everyone already thought he was dead.
You know something? That's so true. I mean, people would constantly come up to me and say, you know, oh, you know, Abe Vigoda was so terrific, and, you know, it's too bad that he passed away, and he hadn't passed away. It was very, very strange. I don't know whether someone was spreading a bizarre rumor, but a lot of people, there were different times when people thought that he had passed away. And in fact, I had even heard, you know, this same kind of thing, and I thought he had passed away.
Oh, no.
But blessedly, he didn't do it until he was 94, and that's a nice long life.
Barry, there
good
were,
age.
That's a great age. There were stories, you know, in his passing, people were telling the story of his life, and it came up in several different accounts that by accident, People magazine years and years ago had published that he had died. And from then on in, most of America just assumed it's in People magazine. They're not going to miss something like that.
Well, they did.
They did. Tell us this. What was that like? And I know Fish didn't last as long as it should have or could have. But
may I jump in? I can't believe it lasted such a short time because I watched it religiously.
Yeah, me too.
And I thought it was on for years and years and years.
I know. And it was really only on for a couple of seasons. I don't know why it went away, because I thought we were getting very good ratings,
yeah.
And so I'm not exactly sure. There might have been some inter-office machinations going on. I don't know. But, yeah, it did go away earlier than we expected because it really was successful. And, you know, and people still, I mean, I'm a pretty ancient guy now, but people still come up and you know, and talk to me about Fish very warmly. So
could it be that the network also read in People magazine that Abe Vigoda had died and said, well, now we have to cancel the show, despite the fact that he had not died?
I think that's entirely possible.
It could be it. Now, explain for people that were not lucky enough to see Fish. I love the premise. Yes. You had Phil Fish, a detective on Barney Miller. It was his spinoff. You got to meet his family, but it was an interestingly made-up family.
Yes, it was, because it wasn't his real family. It was a family of, you know, he basically ran a foster home.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, and it was him and his wife, Bernice, who was played by Florence Stanley.
A Chicago actress.
And, yes, absolutely a Chicago actress.
Yeah.
And all of the kids were, you know, misfits who were brought into the house. And they were, you know, wonderful, wonderful kids, sweet, sweet kids. And we had a great time. And then I was the social worker. I was sort of the professional in the home, overseeing everybody, but not usually with good results.
Not always with good results, right? And it was our first chance to meet.
No.
It was America's first chance, I believe, to meet a young Todd Bridges. He was Loomis Fish.
Yep.
He later went on to Different Strokes, but that was our first chance to see him.
It was, and then something rather bizarre in my career happened because the 13-year-old in the group was a little girl named Denise Miller. And only, I guess it was 7 years later, I actually ended up on Archie Bunker's Place playing her love interest.
How about that?
Somewhat strange.
That is a very strange twist, Barry.
Yeah.
Wow. Now that's the kind of thing that would have killed Abe Vigoda, but he lived through that. Tell us about him. What was it like? And I know, and I will go through some of your resume. You have worked with some of the greats. You have worked with Dick Van Dyke and Don Rickles, and I could go on and on and on.
Jack Benny.
What was it like to work with Abe Vigoda on a regular basis? Was that exciting?
I can't use the word exciting.
All right, fair enough.
Because if you watch Abe on the show,
yeah,
then you know that, you know, exciting was not his thing.
All right.
So it was lovely. It was warm. It was fun. But Abe was very, very much like the character he played in Barney Miller and in Fish. He was a very laid back guy, and it was a very, very peaceful, quiet, lovely set to work on.
It's so funny because, you know, my first experience with him, and I think most of our first experience with Abe Vigoda is as Tessio in The Godfather.
Yeah.
And then to take that guy, that same guy, Tessio, and build a situation comedy around him, you go, well, that's impossible. That won't work. But it did work.
It did. It absolutely did. Because there's no question that Abe had a funny streak. I mean, he was a great, basically, deadpan comic, you know, almost in the tradition of a Buster Keaton. And he got so much out of just one look. You know, and it was so much fun to see, you know, how he would do that, and just really, and the audience just always loved him. We had a live audience, and they loved him, you know. So it was really a great pleasure and fun to work with him, and just a very sweet man, just a very warm and sweet guy.
You know what really bugs me? We've got Barry Gordon on the line. When he passed away, and I brought this up earlier, it said sunken-eyed character actor.
Yeah.
We've lost this sunken-eyed character actor. I know it's a good description, but that is not what you want as the headline when you finally have died.
No, it's not.
No.
I mean, you're right, but... You know, character actors are sort of known for their physicality and what they bring to a role. So I'm not sure that it's meant entirely as a negative thing.
Right.
You know, because, you know, they used to, you know, they had names for Charlie Chaplin, and they had names for, you know, yes, Buster Keaton, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I think of him almost more in that tradition.
So I'm looking at all these credits. Leave It to Beaver, watched it religiously. One of our favorite shows, Bill, you will attest to this, Alfred Hitchcock Presents.
Yep, love it.
And on Dennis the Menace, in an episode, oddly enough, that says Dennis learns to whistle, but you can't whistle. Look at how cute you are.
This is adorable. Barry, this would be a hit today. If you re-released this song today, this would be a huge hit. You'd blow Adele out of the water with this.
I haven't. Long time.
You have just been doing everything since. How old were you when you sang this? I can't whistle.
Let's see. I'm probably 7 or 8.
Oh, adorable. Now, can I shared this with the audience, Barry. I have not given away the punchline, but there's a very special kinship between you and I, and I'll explain. When I was a very little child, when I was 2 years old, my dad was in a play here in Chicago, and as they were in rehearsals for the play, a film version of the play was released, and that play was called 1,000 Clowns, and the movie was called 1,000 Clowns. It's the first movie I ever saw in a theater, and you and Jason Robards were the stars of that movie.
Yes, but tell me about your dad. What was he doing a production there? Or
my dad played the character Chuckles the Chipmunk, and I know of all the people who heard that, only you will understand what that is.
I totally understand that, yeah.
There's a scene in the movie where the lead actor takes your character, Nick, to see a children's television production, and it's a kid's show, like our own Bozo Circus, but it's Chuckles the Chipmunk, and my dad played that role. And you were the kid. I remember I was less than 3. I was just shy of 3 years old. But I was transformed thinking a kid, because you were only a couple years older than me, a kid could be in movies. That was amazing to me. It still is amazing.
There's a lot of kids in movies. You know, Roddy McDowell.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of kids for a long time. Jackie Coogan.
Oh, yeah.
And Jackie Cooper. But, yeah, but, it, you know, it's interesting because I actually did 1,000 Clowns in Chicago because I did the road tour as well as doing it on Broadway, and so I actually had the pleasure of playing it in Chicago for 4 weeks.
Where did it play when you did it here in town? Do you remember, Barry?
Oh boy,
hard to remember. It's 50 years ago, so if you don't remember it,
if you throw some names, I'll know.
Boy, I'm trying to think of who would have put on the production at the time, but just to do it on Broadway, you were at the time.
It was whatever house got the national tour.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was, yeah.
But I just remember thinking to myself, because you were a kid, but you were one of those adults trapped in a kid's body. And I remember even at the tender age of just under three going, that's the way it should be. What that guy's doing, that's good stuff.
Oh, that's funny. Well, you know, but radio is my second love because my dad was a radio announcer in Albany, New York, and
Well, you've done some radio. You had it. I don't know if you still do, but I know you were doing like a kind of almost a political radio show for a while, right?
It was
a political show.
It was a political show. Yeah, I don't know why I got into that for a while, but I did and enjoyed it a lot.
Well, you know what the problem is though with doing, and you know this already, the problem with doing politics on the radio is there's nothing really important going on in the world of politics right now.
I know. It's so boring.
Are you still doing the show? Or are you podcasting? Because that's what everybody does now. It's pretty easy to podcast.
No, I'm not. I'm actually not. I've taken on a whole new venture in the last several years in my life. I keep moving on. I'm a moving on guy. I don't know why. I just I don't like to do the same thing for very, very long, but although I acted for 60 years, so I probably shouldn't say that, but I'm now teaching, and I'm teaching in the Master of Fine Arts program at Cal State University in Los Angeles.
Oh, nice.
And I'm teaching acting for theater and film and having a wonderful, wonderful time now. You know, kind of giving back. That was the school that I went to, and so I'm having a great time doing that and meeting the new generation and helping the new generation. And that's what I, you know, hopefully that's what will happen, is that people will come out of the class and have great careers and hopefully as long as I did. So.
Oh, that would be so nice.
And how is it different now, Barry? Because, you know, you have, I have two boys, 13 and 16, and they're obsessed with these YouTube video sensations. You have people getting, you know, millions and billions of hits with no really acting ability whatsoever. Has acting changed? Are you seeing a different thing now that you're a professor at Cal State?
Acting has not changed. I mean, acting is still acting, and the skills are the same. I think what has changed is the business.
Yeah.
The business has changed radically. I actually recently also taught at there a business of acting class as a graduate seminar, and I probably learned more than I taught, because now, I mean, you literally, it's almost difficult to get on as a series regular unless you already have some kind of platform on Twitter or on Facebook. And, you know, they literally ask you now, you know, how many friends you have and how many.
Jeez.
You almost have to come with your built-in ratings. Which never happened before, and I think that's what's changed so much.
So when Laurence Olivier would go in to meet with a producer, they wouldn't say, "Larry, you're good, but how many Facebook followers do you have right now?" That never happened?
I don't think that ever happened.
That's crazy.
It is crazy, and doesn't that change it so tremendously where, you know, in a way it's good that more people can get into the world of acting, but you're not paying your dues kind of like the other actors,
sure,
including yourself, have?
Well, I think that can be true, but, you know, but they certainly are still paying their dues. I know my students are very, very diligent, you know, about their work, and they really care about their work. And, you know, they don't expect to just go out and, you know, automatically become a, you know, reality TV star or a social media star. They really care about the profession, and they care about the craft of acting. And that excites me whenever I see that.
Barry, it's taken nearly 50 years to finally meet you, but I swear I'm thrilled it finally happened. I've been hoping and hoping and hoping one day to talk to you, and you didn't disappoint us. You really didn't.
Well, you're very kind, and it's been a great pleasure, and thanks so much for thinking of me, and I'm sorry it was in sad circumstances.
Sure.
And we'll all, you know, be thinking of Abe because he's a beautiful guy.
So true.
With sunken eyes.
With sunken eyes, as Wendy points out.
And it's weird because, Bill, I think you said that Barry Gordon was an adult trapped in a kid's body, and you're just the opposite. You're a kid trapped in an adult's body. So you two really did
Comes
click.
Full circle.
Yes.
It does.
Barry, an honor to meet you. So nice to meet you, sir.
Great to meet you, Wendy. Great to meet you, too, Bill.
Thanks. And if you're in town, if they revive Thousand Clowns and you decide to come back and reprise your role, you have a home here. You come by and say hello, all right?
Well, thank you very much. I will. My son lives in Skokie. So.
Oh, wow.
Well, say hi to him. He's probably listening.
Hey, Colin. How you doing, man? And Melissa, how you guys?
I live in Evanston, 5 minutes
Bill
away.
Bill will now stalk them.
I'll
I
stalk
wish you
them.
Wouldn't have told us that, Barry.
Okay.
Thanks, Barry.
So much.
Have a great week.
Thanks. You too.
All right. Take care, Barry Gordon. Everybody.
You're gushing.
One of the co-stars on Fish. I am. But I'm telling you, he's one of those guys that I've seen in so many things. I don't know if you remember on Curb Your Enthusiasm, he plays Larry David's rabbi. He's
yes,
so funny on that.
He is so funny, and he looks the same.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
He's aging very, very well. He looks the same as he did with the little kid when he sang about the whistle, except he's got a full beard and stuff. But.
That's changed a little. Yeah. All right. A break, and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy WGN. Do you ever wish you could have just one question back? Do you ever interview somebody and you go, I just asked the wrong question? I guess asking Barry Gordon if it was exciting to work with Abe Vigoda was not the best way to word the question. As he pointed out, Abe wasn't much on excitement.
But see, that's where this whole thing started from. There was a Barney Miller reunion that he didn't show up to because he had something else going on.
Right.
I heard an interview of him. And so People Magazine took it upon themselves to say, since he's not there, why wouldn't he be here? This was such a great show.
Yeah.
He must be dead. And that's what happened.
Yeah.
And earlier we were talking about, you know, people certainly had time to get Abe Vigoda's obituary together.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I had mentioned something. There was someone in the entertainment business, a big celebrity, who they accidentally released it. And I'm when I brought that up before, I was thinking Bob Hope, and there were a bunch of people that texted and said
I think it
was
Bob Hope. I'm pretty sure it is.
It's like before his actual demise, he was close to it, I think.
Right, for a while.
But somebody, you know, accidentally put it out there, and that's bad.
That's terrible.
And, you know, I don't see Bob Hope dealing with it as well as Abe Vigoda did. Abe made kind of a joke about it.
For years. Forever.
In fact, he got up to heaven and he said, I know you thought you saw me before, but I haven't been here.
He would show up on a couple of the celebrity roasts, the ones they do on Comedy Central, and they wouldn't even let him, like, speak. He wasn't one of the roasters. They just brought him in and put him near the stage so he could be a punchline so guys could rip on him. And he bought it. He was fine with that. He was enjoying every minute of it, Abe Vigoda was.
And was on Conan O'Brien as well.
Often.
And one of the last times they recreated a scene from The Godfather. Someone else texted in, Bill, saying that they remember Sal Tessio being about 50 when The Godfather came out.
You mean Abe Vigoda's age when
yes.
he played him? Yeah, that's about right. He was right around late 40s or maybe 50.
So he didn't get the Barney Miller until...
That came after. Barney Miller came after.
Interesting. Like, you know, John Mahoney didn't start acting till he was, you know, he got a great
right.
role when he was older.
Well, Abe Vigoda did mostly plays. He did some episodic TV, but mostly plays.
Oh, that's right, because he's an actor, as we heard
as we learned.
Some post-death interviews.
Yes.
I believe we have to take a break now, Bill.
We do, as a matter of fact. A quick break. Steve with the news, and then more show coming your way next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Come on, Barbie. Let's go party.
I'm going to re-record this song.
Are you going to redo
love
this?
It. I'm sorry.
Yeah?
I also like Psy, so what's wrong with
right.
me?
Right, you've got...
I think Seth Rogen's cute.
I think you've got your finger on the pulse, is what I think. it's dimming quickly, but it's there. For those of you who don't know, they're changing Barbie a little bit. Now, not all Barbies. You'll still be able to get classic Barbie, classic I'm completely out of proportion Barbie will still be available to you, the consumer. But now they've added a whole new tier of Barbie dolls. And we'll read you the story. And the pictures are, you can find the pictures everywhere today.
I have so many problems with this whole thing. So go ahead.
All right. Here's the story quickly. In her 5.5 decades as the representation of a once idealized vision of beauty. Now, it's interesting they say once, once idealized.
Idolized?
As if to say, this is what people used to think is pretty but no longer do.
Well,
right?
Look at the first Barbie doll, which my sister still has, with the really blonde, frizzed out hair.
Right.
And she has the black and white striped bathing suit on. It's very like
outdated?
Veronica Lake. It's very Marilyn Monroe-y.
Right.
That was very popular as a look then.
Well, they say, now I'm looking at the, Wendy, read this, because I wanted to say idolized too, but in the story it
idealized.
Says idealized,
yeah,
right?
Right?
Okay. All right. So they have said that if...
Really, you did that just to show that you weren't
wrong?
I'm
looking at going, how am I not reading that word right? But it could...
You were correct, sir.
Either word could have fit. It was once idolized and once idealized. So either of those are correct,
I guess.
You're
correct.
They've said, I don't know who they are, but I've seen the story before, that for a real woman to have the proportions that a Barbie doll has would be nearly impossible naturally. You could certainly get... implants if you wanted to.
And there have been women. Have you seen some of these crazy women?
Yes. Yes. Seems unnatural.
I'm not talking about the Kardashians.
Seems unnatural. So, all right. In her 5.5 decades as the representation of a once idolized or idealized, your mileage may vary, vision of beauty as personified in plastic and also as a favorite plaything of bazillions of children. And I'm going to say mostly girls. I'm not going to say exclusively.
I don't know. Sometimes my brother would have Barbie meet G.I. Joe.
That happened.
And they had a session.
Behind the tent sometimes.
Yep.
That would happen. Barbie has taken a rather slow path towards the light of self-discovery. For much of her history, she was one thing to all people. She was blonde. She was impossibly svelte and math adverse. Now, the reason they say that, I hope everybody will remember this, when they introduced Talking Barbie years ago, one of the phrases that Talking Barbie would say when you pulled the string is, math is hard. And a lot of people, and I don't blame them, took umbrage with that and said, that's not what a role model like Barbie should be saying to our girls, math is hard.
First of all, a Barbie doll should not be a role model.
Well,
it's a doll.
Look at the things she has done in her career.
What?
She has been
a
model.
She had a camper.
She had a camper. She had a dream house. She was an astronaut.
A Corvette.
She had a nice Corvette, the Starvette, the Barbie Starvette. My cousin Lori had them. But G.I. Joe sometimes would get a 3-day leave.
And then visit. She couldn't find it, Bill.
Right. Right. I don't know what happened to it. Well, now they've come out with a whole new line of Barbies. And what they're trying to do here is to say, look, we're advancing. We know that all women... and that should read, no women are built like Barbie. So we're going to give you Barbies now that look more, they're more reflective of what women really look like. So they've made them various colors and various heights.
And that is, I guess, just last year, and I found this to be fascinating, Bill. Just last year, Mattel introduced Barbies with movable ankles.
Yes.
That sounds dirty. But it's not. The purpose of this, Bill...
why?
Would be to... I have so many... Do you see
there's
me editing?
There's a couple reasons for this, but what's the reason they gave?
Are you having fun watching us both edit ourselves right there?
Yes.
It would allow the dolls to wear flat shoes for the first time, because when you did those the high heels, her foot was shaped like it was misshapen.
Right.
Which is what happens if you wear high heels all the time to an extent.
I'm sorry, I just joined the conversation again. What were you saying?
Removable ankles would allow the dolls to wear flat shoes for the first time. That's just last year.
Right.
And 4 body types, 7 skin tones, 22 eye colors, 24 hairstyles.
This is the new development that's just taking place now, all the different colors and heights. But you have to admit, because I'm looking at a group shot of the new Barbies, they're all still impossibly thin, aren't they? I mean, one or two of them are slightly larger than the others, but even by standards by which we live, the biggest of these new Barbies is still really thin.
Let me see the biggest that
you're
pointing.
That's the biggest one.
Okay, I have to tell you something. We shouldn't be saying the biggest Barbie, first of all.
How do we phrase it? What's the right phraseology for this?
But I mean, we as a people should not be saying, oh, that's the big Barbie.
All right.
That's the chunky Barbie.
The most nourished of all Barbies.
No, but that should have been what the Barbie looked like originally.
Right.
When you look in comparison to the original Barbie,
yeah,
it looks like you're comparing Keira Knightley to Adele.
Kind of, but not as extreme. You know,
what did you want? Like a Toady Fields Barbie?
No, but when I read it, I thought there's a lot of girls out there that are overweight. And even this, and I know what Mattel is doing. They're trying their best to make amends and say, look, we're being more realistic. But even this one, the one that I guess they would say is the most, what's the right word without getting it?
Voluptuous.
Is still really thin. Isn't she? You don't think
not
that...
in comparison to the original Barbie.
No, not in comparison, but not in comparison, but it's still not.
She's hippier.
Her waist is
wider.
Yeah.
She's fuller. She's fuller figured, and she looks fantastic. I just don't feel they even needed to do this because a Barbie doll is. I didn't even really play with Barbies that much. Did your daughters?
They had a year where they were into Barbies and then never again. They just came and went with both of my daughters. They just weren't interested after about a year.
I did not really play with Barbies on an extended term
basis. They're still popular, but they're nowhere near as popular as they were 25 or 30 years ago. And there's different versions of them. Like, different companies make... Did you ever see Bratz dolls?
Yeah.
Those look like sluts. They just do. I call them slut dolls. I didn't even call them brat dolls with a Z at the end. They look
trampy.
They look trampy. Your mom would have called them floozies.
Or a gun mall.
For all these years,
I thought my mom was calling me a gun mouth.
No, you're not a gun
mouth. Because I swear.
You're not a gun mouth.
A gun mall.
Many people wanting to weigh in on this. 312.
Weigh in? Is that a slam?
Nope, not at all. Not even a little bit. 312-981-7200. If you're on hold, stay on hold, and we will get to you in just a little bit. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Let us catch you up very quickly. Mattel is trying their best to update the Barbie. They're still going to have the classic Barbie, the classic out-of-proportion Barbie, but they're also going to have new Barbies that hopefully will speak to everyone. Some of them are taller. Some of them are thinner. Some of them are bigger in all different respects. Some of them are shorter. It's a cornucopia of Barbies, Wendy. But are they accurate? That's the question we're asking.
And there is one that appears to be a little...
Go ahead. You try it. I tried it. There's no easy way to say this.
Well, she looks more Rubenesque.
All right.
Than the original Barbie. But when I... Like, if I would just see that doll on the shelf, I wouldn't go, oh, look at that fat doll.
Well, they're not trying to make anybody say that. But what they're trying to do is be more reflective of real people and the different body types. I just don't think they captured it. I don't think.
All right. Well, Mark is on the line. Mark, you're a toy expert.
I've been called worse. But
who do you toy expert for? How did you become a toy expert?
I actually was with Tiger Electronics, and I ran marketing at Hasbro.
Cool. Excellent.
And Bertram, we know Bertram and stuff.
Everyone knows Steve Bertram.
We worked on Furby. Yeah, everybody knows Steve.
Oh, God. Yeah. We just got a new Furby a couple years ago, and
they're cool.
Sorry, paid for the house.
I don't blame. All right, so what do you know about this?
So I got called by AP this morning asking about this, and I did some research looking, and it's funny because their intent is right. They're trying to make the dolls more reflective.
Sure.
Time, which is great. The question is, why do you have to stick what body form the doll is in the name on the front? So the guy asked me the question. He said, what do you think of the new curvy Barbie? Which is a nice way of saying, like you guys said, Rubenesque or chubby.
Yeah.
And the question is, why is it relevant to say she's curvy? You can look and see she's curvy.
So they put that right on the box. It says, I'm reading it right here. It says that you can get petite Barbie, tall Barbie, curvy Barbie. That shouldn't be on the box. It's obvious.
Do you need that? I mean, if you look. Hey, I'm a short Jewish guy. I can tell that the doll's tall.
How did short Jewish guy Barbie sell? I'm trying to remember how that sold.
Not as well. But when you look, the whole point is, if they're trying to get away from the objectifying the girls and stuff, their intent is dead on. It's great.
Yeah.
The coolest thing of all is the careers they're picking, like game developer Barbie and stuff like that. It's all awesome.
Yeah, that is good.
But why do they have to, you know, why do you need a descriptor to say she's tall?
Just say Barbie. Yeah. Just there'd be a Barbie box because, you know, I'm blonde, so I would always pick the blonde doll.
Right.
And you could pick whatever doll you identify with mostly.
Right, right.
Exactly. It's time to get away from the masters of the obvious stuff. You can see what the doll is. Like I said, it's great that they're doing this, but let the kids, you know, it's also a question of what do they do content-wise? Are they going to show these dolls in their new, you know, their new movies and different things that they do?
Yeah.
And what's the personality? Tell me what the doll's personality is or what the girl can do to help carry on the fantasy play that she wants. It doesn't matter what she looks like. They'll figure, you know, they can do that. The clothes are right. The careers are right and stuff like that. Let the girls figure out what they want it to be.
So when Mattel gets feedback like this, what would they normally, because it all makes sense. Everything you said makes sense. What will they do with this? Will they figure something out? Some sort of a compromise?
Well, I think I think they're on the right path.
Yeah.
And I actually read something that a friend of mine there had said, which is, we've been taking in all this feedback, but we're a massive company and we can't change that fast.
Right.
And I think it's important that they acknowledge that, yes, change is necessary and we are taking input, and where they can't change a couple million doll run instantly, they can change their messaging when they create their apps, when they do their animation, when they go on YouTube on the Barbie channel. There's lots of way to convey all these positive messages.
Sure.
They just have to make sure they're being true to what they're saying they're doing and have it carry throughout the whole thing and acknowledge the change is going to happen over time. It's not going to happen immediately.
You're absolutely right on the labeling, because when you look on their website at Mattel.com and you want to order, first of all, the fashionista Barbie should be done away with.
Because
they're,
why?
They're irritating.
Why? I don't know what they look like.
They're
what are they?
They're fashionistas, so they have crazy hair, clothes,
right.
And kids can't afford those clothes either. But it bothers me, I guess, to see Barbie original, Barbie petite,
yeah,
Barbie curvy.
Yeah.
That really is the problem,
Seems
Mark.
Seems a bit much.
Well, if you guys want to have fun, look at the when this guy called me this morning, I looked up, I just Googled curvy to see what it says.
Yeah.
And the Urban Dictionary said, you could have easily called it the Kim Kardashian Barbie. I get that. I mean, it's clear what, if they're really trying to get away from the stereotype, then just come up with the different body shapes, but focus on, you know, all of the positive role model stuff and the good things that happens. They've changed Barbie's shape and form in the past. They've tried this. It's a question that they can carry through the marketing on all the other things. And if they're really listening to what girls want, and if, frankly, if girls care about doll play anymore, that's their biggest question they better answer.
That's what I was telling Bill. It doesn't bother me that there weren't different Barbies because I didn't really play with them that much. And a Barbie doll, you know what a Barbie doll looks like.
Right.
But now when you look at the curvy one, whose, you know, thighs are definitely bigger and she has hips and a waistline that's much bigger. Seriously, she is, and she's still attractive. But you know what? Then you should take it a step further, because there are girls that are going to look at this, quote, curvy Barbie and go, oh, my God, then what am I? Because I'm bigger than the curvy
maybe.
One.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot more to it. It's cool that you guys are talking about it. It's nice that it's getting the attention. It'll be great to see how they follow through on what it looks like they're starting.
You know what also I'd like to see, Mark, is I'd love to see Toys R Us's order sheet of how many of the regular standard Barbies they order and how many of the new curvier Barbies they order.
Well, I think the reality there is, and, you know, people will laugh me out of the industry for saying this out loud, but it's a collector business now.
Yeah.
I mean, very few young girls are swarming to the stores to buy the next Barbie that's coming out, which is why they're trying to address this, which is great. But the reality is that the clothing and, like I said, careers and the play value that it brings with all of the different content is what's going to drive the revamp of Barbie, not completely stuff like this. It's the whole package.
Interesting. Mark, we appreciate your expertise on this. We really do.
Hey, happy to talk. Love listening to you guys.
Oh, you're very
kind.
Thank
you, Mark. Why don't you hang on? We'll get your number in case a toy emergency comes up.
We have toy emergencies from time to time.
You got it.
Thank you so much. And a listener is kind of echoing my sentiments on this. 630, can you imagine if you had a heavy set daughter and you buy her the curvy Barbie, that would be insulting too.
You know, I in a weird way, I get that. I understand that.
Just get one that says Barbie on it,
right.
And you pick one that most resembles you.
Yeah, yeah, that seems to make
sense.
I
guess Mark's right. It is a step in the right direction, but it still seems wrong.
It's a little off balance. It is. All right, a break, more show. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Steve, thanks. Steve, I don't have the details in front of me, and I don't know that Wendy does either, but a big announcement was made earlier today with the Blackhawks and our station WGN. Do you have the details? Because I can't find them. I know I have them somewhere.
Yes, the Blackhawks are going to be on WGN radio for the rest of our lives.
For the rest of our lives?
I hope I live longer than 2023.
I'm hoping so, too.
Well, they're going to extend it.
Yeah, a five-year extension.
Five-year extension through the 23-24 season.
Right.
That's awesome.
Isn't that great news? That is fantastic news.
I was just riding up on an elevator with Steve Cochran, just for fun. We weren't really going anywhere.
Right.
About during our lunch break.
Yeah.
And I was telling him that just, you know, I've always been a Sox fan, and I would watch the Sox games and go to the Sox games, but really I just kind of wanted to go to the game to get a beer and a funnel cake.
Uh-huh.
But at the Hawks games, it's like I have just completely fallen in love.
It's very exciting.
It is, and I get it, and it's, you know, I have to laugh because my husband goes, this is so great, I can sit on the couch with you and talk hockey and have impure thoughts about you.
Yep.
It's nice when that happens. And then Cochran was telling me his daughter Amy is just a huge Hawks fan. It's like once I've made the turn, I'm so into it.
Yeah. Well, they've made it as easy as it could be to root for the team.
Yep.
I mean,
and to get new fans every day.
Yeah. It's so nice. I can't tell you how many times now, just in sitting here in our studio on Michigan Avenue, watching people walk down the street with so much Hawk paraphernalia on, hats or T-shirts or jackets or whatever. At the health club, I've already told you this story, but there was a time I was wearing a Blackhawks hat, and I looked over, and a guy on my left and a girl on my right and then another guy across from me all had Blackhawks stuff on, and I went, that's really quite a change from what I remember. When we were growing up during the Bobby Hall and Tony Esposito and Stan Mikita years, that was pretty common, but then there was a lot of downtime where the pride wasn't there, the team wasn't winning, and now
and you couldn't watch them on TV. That was a big problem.
That's a big part of it. It really is.
And, you know, I kind of feel bad. We were talking about this off the air. My youngest son, Dylan, is now all into the Hawks because we are. And it's very easy to love the Hawks at any age. But he's 13. He is now playing some kind of hockey in our crawl space just because it's fun. And we have a goal horn. And so he hits a tennis ball into empty boxes in the crawl space.
Mm-hmm.
I have aptly named it Crawl Ball.
Crawl Ball.
Right. And
we've extended our contract with Crawlball through 2023 as well, by the way.
But he's all, and then they're doing floor hockey in gym class.
Oh,
and
yeah.
He loves Corey Crawford, so he wants to be a goalie.
Yeah.
And I'm like, Dylan, it's too late for you. You're 13. You can't all of a sudden now start playing hockey.
Well,
which saddens me.
We talked to Jamal Mayers the other day, and his kid is 3, and he's already out there skating all the time.
I know.
And there's, I guess you could say
it's too late.
I hate to say it, but
boy, when there's a crawl ball team that starts up,
oh, he's going to be drafted number one. Don't you worry.
Sponsored by Permaseal because they encapsulated our crawl space, and that's why crawl ball is happening.
That's was born crawl ball. Now, go on.
Some news today. Speaking of the Blackhawks, Jonathan Toews and I had heard early in the week, Coach Q was saying, "Boy, Toews is really tired. They've had so many back-to-back games."
Right, it's been a grueling schedule lately.
Totally. So Toews was, worn out, and you know, Q said something about, "Boy, it's unfortunate he's not going to get a rest. He's going right to the All-Star game."
Right.
Well, now,
and it should also be noted, they took him out of the third period in the game the other night. The Hawks were already down quite a bit, so
that's not even a game.
If
we can't
gonna,
count that as a game.
Yeah, that game didn't count. So they pulled him in the third period, and now today there's been an interesting development.
Well, Jonathan Toews, good old captain number 19, he will not participate in Sunday's All-Star game because of an illness that limited his time in the Blackhawks' 5-0 loss to the Hurricanes on Tuesday. Again, my theory on that, Hurricanes at their stadium played Adele Hello.
Mm-hmm.
The Blackhawks went to sleep because that is not a hockey song, and that's why they had the 5-0 loss.
That makes sense.
By NHL rules, Toews will also be suspended one Blackhawks game for pulling out of the All-Star game. That is not right.
that's the part that we really need to examine for just a little bit. Now, there's another player. Is it Ovechkin who's also going through this, Kevin? It is, isn't it? Alex Ovechkin?
Yeah, he's got an injury, I think.
He's injured. So both guys will miss. They've both been picked for the All-Star team, but they both have injuries, so they'll sit out. And the penalty that the NHL has imposed is a one-game suspension. So you could easily say, why is that fair? We've got guys that are hurt, they're injured, they can't be expected to play in a game where they're hurt. But what they're doing is, and I know this will sound crazy, but it's true, they're saying to any other players, this is a warning. If you get picked for the All-Star team, we don't want you faking any kind of an injury or an illness. We want to make sure that the fans get to see the stars. You better be there or it's going to cost you a little
Bill,
bit.
Bill, don't you think they want to make the All-Star team?
I would say more times than not, yes. But there have been players in every sport. There's been so many stories over the years about a guy who goes, I need some time off. I can't be in the middle of the season just messing around with an All-Star game. I got to take a couple days
off. Name names. Because when you're an athlete, I'm sorry, I don't know that people want to bail. Because we also asked Jamal Mayers about Corey Crawford, because that is the most underrated goalie in the league. He's so great.
Right.
And I'm like, why didn't he get it? And it was some reasoning. But then there was some advantage to him not being a goalie, because it's going to be 3-on-3 and it's going to be really tough.
Yeah, the All-Star game is built for scoring. In basketball and in hockey, the fans want to see scoring, and you really get a lot of offense. It's not a lot of defense, it's a lot of offense. So the school of thought is, why beat a guy up and throw him in the net? This is a shortened game, by the way. They've changed the All-Star game's rules around a little bit with the 3-on-3. And I want to say the games are just a one-period game, I think. It's a 20-minute game. Does that sound right? I was reading the rules the other day, and a lot of it didn't make sense to me. There's more games. It's not. It was always just one game. You had the West versus the East, but now they've changed it a little bit, and they're going divisional, where there's two games, and then the winner of the first game and the second game square off in the final game, and I think all those games are 20-minute games.
Here's what I have. Yes, 3 20-minute games. The new format will divide the All-Star game into 3 20-minute games, with star players from each division making up the 4 All-Star teams, Pacific, Central, Atlantic, and Metropolitan.
Yeah.
And getting back to the Jonathan Toews story, Jonathan will not participate in the 2016 NHL All-Star Weekend in Nashville. He was pulled Tuesday night, third period, because of an illness, remains symptomatic as of Thursday. Blackhawks team physician Dr. Michael Terry said in a statement, and I'm quoting here as well, "At this time, rest over the break is most important for him to properly recover and be fully healthy heading into the rest of the regular season." So Taser is going to miss the Hawks game at the Avalanche on Tuesday.
That's their first game back after the break.
Taves played just 10 minutes, 7 seconds in the loss to the Hurricanes. Taves could have sat out Hawks game against the Hurricanes to serve his suspension, but opted to try and play. So he could have done his suspension before it happened?
In advance, yeah.
Hawks winger Patrick Kane is expected to participate in Sunday's All-Star game. I cannot believe for a minute that Jonathan Taves and his work ethic and his unbelievable sportsmanship would try to get out of it because he's tired.
It doesn't seem him at all. But you can kind of see the NHL's thing of, hey, we have to impose this rule, because if not, other guys that just wanted to have a week off would just take a week off and go, what, the All-Star game doesn't mean anything to me. I don't need to be there.
They're not going to do that, though. I can't imagine that. Taves joins Capital winger, as you mentioned, Alex Ovechkin, as two of the NHL's biggest stars to miss the game. James Neal of the Predators is replacing Taves on the All-Star roster, while... easy for me to say.
These are two big... seriously, you already know about Jonathan Taves, but Ovechkin is one of the...
Kuznetsov is replacing Ovechkin.
You cannot say that on the radio. I know for a fact that cannot be said on the radio.
Ovechkin is a great hockey player.
Yeah, he is. He is.
But these are two of the greatest in the league.
They are two of the best, hands down.
I don't think they're trying to get out of it. I think the suspension is crazy.
Is it too much?
I don't know. What do
you
think?
Suspend him?
I don't like it.
I'd prefer that he not be suspended, because I'm a fan of the teams. And what, it's one of those things where you go, what if at the very end of the season they don't get it because of one point or something? You go, oh, that could have been the point that Jonathan Toews scored. I know that it's all just conjecture, but that's what we do in the world of sports fanship.
I know. I'm getting to that point now. Stanley, is this Stanley Cup?
Lord Stanley.
Oh, okay. Hey, Lord Stanley. All right, you have the All-Star specifics.
I do. All right, so what's going to happen is they pared it down to a 20-minute game, you know, 3-on-3. So they're going to have three squads. So they each play 20 minutes, or four squads. They play 20 minutes, and then the two that advance, the two that winners, then they advance to another game to decide the winner of, you know, the All-Star game. They just did it based on, you know, last year it was really, I know the NHL said they were very embarrassed the way that things went because it really wasn't any defense and the goalkeepers didn't really, you know, do their job. So they wanted to pare it down to something where it was going to be more viewer friendly,
yeah,
and more competitive,
yeah.
But as far as I'm concerned, they did not, you know, pass this by with me as far as the suspensions,
yeah.
Had they talked to me about the suspensions, that never would have happened.
You would have changed that around a little bit.
Well,
is it possible, yeah, Stanley, if on a 3-on-3 situation like they're going to do, what if a guy does have a penalty, would it be a 3-on-2? It would be really weird to watch a hockey game where you're just down to 3 versus 2 on the ice.
All right, Jiminy Cricket, you know I have to go back to my Bible and check that.
See what it says.
All right, Lord, we got to take a break.
I don't have an answer. Bye.
All right, bye.
In the regular season, in the overtime, it would turn into a 4-on-3.
Oh, they would add a guy. Yeah. The team that did not commit a penalty would get a bonus guy. All right.
Really?
I guess.
They're making it up as they go along now, aren't they? Although I'm loving the 3-on-3 now in the overtime. I really love that.
It is exciting, but those don't go 20 minutes. I mean, for these games, you're going to have 3-on-3 for 20 minutes. That's breakneck speed. Yeah. And I think they said, did they say 3 shifts, Kevin, or 4 shifts? It's not. It's a very minimal amount of guys on each team, so it's going to take a lot out of you. It's just a 20-minute game, but it's going to go hard and fast.
We, of course, wanted to debut a new segment on this show, so we've started the Hockey Talky. What have you been calling it?
Hockey Talk.
Oh, that's right.
We're still working on the name.
Somebody has a better name.
What is it?
Hockey Shtick.
Like that.
So we're going to do that. This is Bill and Wendy's Hockey Shtick. 312-981-7200. We should give him a Lou Malnati's or something for that.
All right.
And we will take a break. We'll come back with our hockey shtick. I love it. It's fun.
It is Bill and it is Wendy, and we're talking about the fact that Jonathan Toews, the captain of the Blackhawks, will be missing the All-Star game. He's injured. He needs a little time to recuperate. As a result of this, the NHL will impose a 1-game penalty.
It says he has an illness.
He has an illness, right. That could be anything. We're hoping it's not serious. He'll miss 1 game. He'll have to serve a 1-game suspension. It's up to the team to choose when they're going to serve the suspension. It is believed it'll be that first game back.
And he could have done it when he was against the last game, the Hurricanes.
The Hurricanes. Now, he missed
this.
You can't go, hey, I served 1/3 of a game. Could I just miss 2/3 of the next game?
See, Bill, you should be an attorney because I could see you pleading that case.
I would deal mostly with fractional law. I would do any cases where fractions were required. I know there's not a lot of specialty for that, but I would try that.
All right, Mike, welcome to Bill and Wendy's Hockey Shtick. I questioned why anyone would want to miss an All-Star game if they were chosen. You have a reason?
Well, just speaking from a player standpoint, from a devil's advocate, I was looking at the Hawks. They've played something like 53 games and multiple back-to-back nights within that 53 games. You know, I can see how they would certainly want a break. It's different if it was maybe my first All-Star game, being all excited and jacked up for it. But, man, after a while, some of those guys, that's the only time they'd have to get together with family and get away somewhere warm for a few days before having to get back to the grind again.
But that's what happens when you're good. Kaner's playing.
Yeah. It's a curse and a blessing at the same time.
It is.
And you said before, you said name names. For some reason, the one that hits me was a couple years ago, Derek Jeter just decided in baseball, I really need a couple of days off. I'm not going to play. And people were all over him. Like,
that's because Jeter rhymes with cheater.
I guess so. All right.
And then you have a 3-on-3 type format. So I've been playing since I was in high school, and a lot of times three-on-three tournaments are played on what's called studio rinks or smaller pond hockey rinks. Well, you're talking a full-size NHL rink playing three-on-three. It's a killer to the goalies. It really is.
It would have to be. Yeah. All right, so you understand it. You say, but although, doesn't that one-game penalty seem a little bit on the stiff side? Be honest.
I guess, like you say, probably sending a message that they don't want this to become a habit. But on the other hand, it seems like it's creating a lot more interest this year because most of these all-star games are such, you know, they're just kind of going through the motions. Well, this three-on-three at least is creating some excitement, something new, something different, and
yeah,
it'll be fun to watch.
All right. All right. Well, we appreciate it. Thanks so much, Mike.
And, Mike, you said you're a hockey player. Any interest in coaching a good crawl ball team?
It brought back memories when we were kids playing in the basement, that's for sure.
All right. Well, thank you so much for calling, Mike. We appreciate it.
Take care. Enjoy your show.
Thank you.
Go Hawks.
I'm trying to find last year's score of the NHL All-Star Game, and all I remember is it was quite a shootout. There was like more scoring than ever before, and you know, people up at the league just went, well, this is becoming a laughingstock. We can't just have everybody scoring at will. We got to do something. So that's why the change in the rules.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. Do I have time? I don't know if I even have time for this. I just want to, since we're talking about sports, and I know it's predominantly hockey, did you see the note that Tom Brady had published to fans of the New England Patriots?
No, I did not.
Very, very quickly. Here's the note. This is from Tom Brady, whose team lost. You know, the New England Patriots lost to the Denver Broncos last week. They will not be going to the Super Bowl. That didn't even seem close to being real from you. Thank you to all of our fans for the incredible support you gave us this season. I'm proud to call New England my home and have the privilege of playing for your team. Our team fought hard all year, right down to the final play. I'm proud of the effort we all put in to prepare each game as if it were our last. We never quit nor lost sight of what we were playing for. It's rare to have the honor of being on a team like that. It takes a lot of hard work and commitment to get as far as we did. Our goal every season is to win the last game, but as I've learned, the road to the next one is paved with seasons like this one. Thanks again. Yours truly, Tom. Isn't
that
nice? Now, I read it and I said to myself two things. Thing number one, that's nice.
It is nice.
That's what a guy should do. And then the second thing I thought is, did his mom make him write that letter? Because that's the kind of letter that your mom goes, now, Tom, you're going to go upstairs and you're going to write a letter to all the fans and you're going to let them know how much you love and appreciate them.
Did mom, he write it on an inflated ball? Or deflated? Because it's easier to write on an inflated one.
He used a deflated pen when he wrote the letter. So it all does tie in. We'll find out what Roe and Anna have. That's coming up in just a little bit. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN.